hearing revolution in the air.
Welcome back to another edition of the Wake Up Call. Good morning. This is Liz Brown. You need to get up. You need to get to me. We have so much stuff to talk about. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. You need to get to me. We have, oh my goodness, so much stuff to talk about. 454-0400 is the phone number. Get up and get to me. My goodness gracious. My goodness gracious. Where do we begin today? Where do we begin? Well, I don't know. Today is one of those days that we have, what's the word I'm looking for, a plethora of places to go. A plethora. Let me start here. There was a report that came out on Tuesday. And it's interesting that we, where we, how we do what we do. It's interesting that we have George W. Bush going across the country, and it's just it's astonishing. Honestly, I am convinced that folks, it's not just that the Democrats don't have a backbone or have a sporadic backbone or have a, we'll use our backbone every other Sunday on a full moon type of a physiological makeup. But even when they insert their backbone, they still don't know how to fight. They don't know how to hit and stick. They don't know how to jab and poke. Oh, now they take some punches. They're good at that. They're good at standing there and taking punches. And maybe that's me. You know what? I got it. Light bulb just went off. I know what it is. They're punch drunk. They've been taking all these punches and they're punch drunk. That explains their sporadic behavior. Because I'm listening to George Bush on this tear. Spying on Americans is good for you. You know, maybe I'm stalking you because I love you. That's the same type of, that's what George Bush is saying. I stalk you because I love you, because I care about you. If you just get your fist out, if you get your face out my fist, we'd be straight. I'm not hitting you. It's the same argument I used on my baby brother when I would take his hand and hit him with it. Quit hitting yourself. I'm not involved in this. You need to stop hitting yourself. Quit smacking yourself. I grew out of that eventually. But that is the mentality that George W. Bush is engaging in as he goes across the country with the gall and the noive to tell us that spying on Americans is because I love you. And that's what you want me to do anyway. And you gave me permission to do it. It's this convoluted, childlike defense theory. I'm doing it because I'm supposed to be doing it. I'm doing it because you wanted me to do it. And I'm doing it because you gave me permission to do it. Huh? Huh? You're spying on Americans without a warrant. I don't care if you suspect them of dropping napalm on Pearl Harbor. I don't care. Suspicions is not what this country has all kind. This is a democracy, right? We have all kinds of things to deal with suspicions. You need to go get a warrant. If you think that you have Jeffrey Dahmer's address and Jeffrey Dahmer's phone number and he's fixing to go get somebody and have a little snack, you need to get a warrant. And guess what? You can even get a warrant after the fact. You saying that I don't ever have to get a warrant if I think I have Jeffrey Dahmer. You get to the door and it's Tom Dahmer. You like, oh, well, spied on Tom and maybe we'll catch him doing something too. Get a warrant. And the Democrats, punch drunk as they are using words like, I don't think that this is legal. What, you're in a fight. And your weapon are the words that you use. You're not dueling. You're not facing off at 20 marks with pistols. Your weapon is your word. The weapons are the words that you use. You think that this is illegal. It is. This is illegal. Stick and stand. Stand and stick. Well, I think that the president is wrong. The president's wrong on this. I don't think most Americans don't want people to spy on them. What's this think, weak, mush mouth, punch drunk battle that you're engaged in? It's wrong to spy on Americans without a warrant. It's wrong. It's illegal. The answer is, in a word, no. You don't do that. Where's the fight? Where's the fight? The cheerleader is running around the country, making you look bad. The ex-male cheerleader, how much does that gotta hurt? How much does that hurt? He was a male cheerleader, and he's whomping you. Ooh, Lord. Ooh, ooh. 454-0400. What's the name of that movie? Punch Drunk Love? Maybe that's what we got going on here. Ooh, 454-0400 is my phone number. 1-877-920-WGNU. Stretched by frequent troop rotations to Iraq and Afghanistan, the Army has become a thin green line. This isn't out of The Nation magazine. Was a great article about impeachment by a lawyer. It's an amazing article about impeachment by a lawyer who was in Congress when there was a vote to Richard Nixon. This report doesn't come from The Nation. It comes from the Pentagon. It comes from a retired Army officer. It comes from someone who was paid by the Pentagon to assess the strength of the military. So he was paid. He could have gone either way. He could have gone either way. And he said that the Army cannot keep up with the rate that they are putting soldiers in Iraq long enough to kill the resistance. They can't. And here's something else that he said that should be plastered, that every single Democrat should be saying. This was a paid contract by the Pentagon to assess, to figure out how strong our troops are. And you know what he said? He said the reason why the Army began reducing the size of the force in Iraq in December, you want to know why? Not because they're trying to get out of this war in time for the election. It's because they realized that the Army was already overextended. Ain't that some stuff? Ain't that some stuff? This was 136 pages. 136-page report. A chilling report. He used phrases like, the Army is in a race against time. That the demands of war or risk breaking the force in the form of a catastrophic decline in recruitment and reenlistment. I don't think that we give the resistance to recruitment enough significance and meaning. We have talked about it on this show in terms of the numbers of people that are not joining the war, but we have to also have a discussion about the fact that people are not joining up to fight in this war because they oppose this war. In other efforts, we had plenty of people that joined up during Vietnam, but we also had a draft. We have plenty of people that joined up in World War II. Why aren't people joining up in this war? It's because they don't approve of it. because they don't want to die. Americans, there are many, many, many Americans out there that will go fight for their country. The reason why people aren't joining up with this war is because they do not feel on any level that this is a fight for America. Do you know, you want to hear a scam that's going on in the military right now? And just another one of these things that expose the conditions that we're living under in America right now. Do you know that there are men and women, young men, young women, that are getting, men that are in the military, and they're getting married to women that they've never met before? Want to know why? Because this pay is so lousy that if you get married, you get $1,000 a month extra stipend for being married. And what do the women get who marry these strangers? They get full-time health benefits. Women are marrying stranger soldiers. Soldiers are marrying women that they don't even know in order to get $1,000 extra a month. And there's some also you get to live off base if you're married. And women are marrying these men because they can't afford health care for themselves out here. Isn't that something? Isn't that something? That we live in, what do they call this? What do they call this, United States? The richest country on earth. We have a great health system, right? Sure, if you can afford it. If you've got the money, you've got no problems. Or if you serve in the United States Congress, you've got no problem. You and your family have health care for the rest of your life. That's worth a trip to Washington right there. That is worth a trip to Washington right there. Gold Star health care. We live in the richest country in the world, and women are marrying strangers in order to get health care benefits. Ain't that something? Ain't that something? We live in the richest country in the world, and we have a thin green line stirring up crap in the Middle East, making our country less safe. We have, Iraq is now toe up from the flow up, messed up because of what we have done. These are amazing times. We don't have the troops. And any drawback, any drawdown, any reduction in force is not about a statement about how this administration wants to get out of Iraq. It's a statement about we don't have the soldiers. This 130-something page report maintains that the army is broken or worn out. And typical, unbelievable la-la land, you think we stupid fashion. Rumsfeld says, the experience of fighting in Iraq and Afghanistan has made the army stronger, not weaker. What the, huh? We're better off? The army is probably as strong and as capable as it has ever been in the history of the country. Huh? Then it comes out his mouth, they are more experienced, more capable, better equipped than ever before. Huh. Oh, Jesus. If this is our strength, what is our weakness? If this is the evidence that we got it all going on, we're in bad and serious trouble. My name is Liz Brown. This is the Wake Up Call. The show is archived at whiterosesociety.org. I've got a website, lizbrown.com. You can email me there at revolution@lizbrown.com. The show is streamed at wgnu.net or lizbrown.com. You need to get up. You need to get to me. We have so much to talk about. Let's get it done. I'm taking a break. Stay with me.
Son, what you don't understand, my words might never explain. So I am hoping that time will. Things may not go as you planned. Dark clouds might bring you pain, but I will be in your heart still, telling you don't look down. Don't feast your eyes on things that are on the ground. And if it gets hard to focus when you're traveling almost at the speed of sound, feeling nowhere bound, remember what I told you and don't you dare look down.
Good morning, St. Louis. 31 minutes after the hour of 6 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by Mr. Clean Premium Windshield Wash. Northbound 55 at Herculane and McNutt, there's an accident reported. Northbound 55 from M to Weber Road. Look for no problems there. Eastbound 44 from 109 and Chrysler looks good. Eastbound 40 from Chesterfield Parkway all the way into Spady, no problems to report. Eastbound 70 between 370 and the Blanchett Bridge is on the move. Northbound 270 at 44, that traffic is moving freely. Westbound 270 from Riverview to Washington Elizabeth, no problems to report. Eastbound 70 is busy from Bryan all the way to 79. Westbound 5570 at the Poplar Street Bridge, look for slow traffic. Westbound 64 before the 5570 split, no problems to report. Westbound Kingbridge traffic at Laclede's Landing looks good. Northbound Route 3 at Poplar Street Bridge, expect normal traffic this hour. That is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by Mr. Clean Premium Windshield Wash. Before the next winter storm hits, try Mr. Clean Premium Windshield Wash. The advanced formula will keep your windshield clean all year long and protects in up to minus 30 degrees when you need it most. Try Mr. Clean Windshield Wash today. Now, taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and Saturday. Mostly sunny today, high in the mid-50s. This evening, not quite as cool. Partly cloudy with a low in the upper 30s. Friday, mostly cloudy, high in the upper 50s. Friday evening, mostly cloudy. A 40% chance of showers with a low in the lower 40s. And on Saturday, showers are likely to continue with a high in the 50s. Currently, at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have clear skies and 28 degrees. Lambert Fields reporting 27 and clear skies as well. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning Wake Up Call. It's up next. We'll take another look at your news, traffic, and weather in the 7 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
Spectacular skating, laughter, and unforgettable moments. Hi, it's Scott Hamilton, the producer of Smucker's Stars on Ice. This year's show celebrates our 20th anniversary, and we are so excited. It's a show about the show. You'll get a behind-the-scenes look from the past 20 years and see how it all happens, from auditions and rehearsals to opening night and everything in between. From our most shining accomplishments to some of the less-than-perfect moments, see skating's best Olympic and world champions in this one-night-only performance of Smucker's Stars on Ice.
With special guest Kurt Browning coming to Savas Center Friday, February 3rd, 7:30 p.m. Your tickets are on sale now at the box office, all Ticketmaster outlets, and at Ticketmaster.com. Kids and senior discounts available. Smucker's Stars on Ice, an IMG production.
It's going to be a great celebration, the 20th anniversary tour of Smucker's Stars on Ice.
Hi, folks. This is Decent Guy Don. Join me at midnight every Monday through Friday right here on WGNU. Yes, you heard right. Every night at midnight, Monday through Friday. Congress isn't the only group of people up at midnight, don't you know? Now the conspiracy hunter is flying under cover of darkness with night vision at the ready to uncover what's going on in Washington and in world capitals and to discuss it with you. It's information that matters to all of us. Remember, join me at midnight Monday through Friday for the Conspiracy Hunter with Decent Guy Don Griffin on AM 920 WGNU, the station with something for everyone, even at midnight. See you then.
He's back.
By popular demand and because it's so right on time, we're putting President Bush back on the couch. Yes, Dr. Justin Frank returns to the next edition of Mondays at 9 for another analysis of the chief executive. Is the domestic spying issue indicative of a controlling personality? Does the president completely depend on Dick Cheney, or is he merely a puppet deciding who pulls the strings? So many more issues have cropped up that we decided another session was in order. Don't miss Dr. Justin Frank, author of Bush on the Couch, our special guest on the next edition of Mondays at 9.
What you need to know, when you need to know it. The award-winning Wake-Up Call with Liz Brown.
Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown, living my life as an African and loving it. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. Get up, get to me. Car phone, you're on the Wake Up Call. Good morning.
Good morning, Liz.
Good morning, George.
You know what the saddest thing about this whole war on terror is it's based on a false premise that we were attacked on 9/11. You know, there's so many holes in the official story. Have you heard of Michael Ballone?
I don't think so, no.
Well, he's one of the two New York City firemen that recovered three of the four flight recorders that the 9/11 Commission said were never recovered.
And what does he say? I mean, what does he say?
And another fireman recovered three of the four flight recorders and carry them off, you know, the premises until, of course, the FBI, you know, evidently, you know, took them away right away and warned them not to say anything about it.
Mm.
Isn't this interesting? So now he has written a book, I understand. I don't know the title of the book, but he might be a good interview. I imagine if he wrote it and mentioned it in his book, I guess he's probably, I would think he might give an interview about it. But three of the four were recovered. And, I wonder what was on those that the government doesn't want anybody to know about. Of course, by now they've had 4 years to doctor up the, you know, the results, so I don't know if we'd ever really know anything from them.
If we had a nickel for every time that they've said and used and gained advantage from the phrase, we were attacked on 9/11. You know, I mean, it has been a very, very effective tool that they have used to further their agenda.
That's what it's all about. And if you want to know what they're going to do next, read the PNAC documents or the Project for New American Century. In fact, I think there's a website, you know, www, I think it's Project for New American Century, I think is what it is. And it's an 87-page report, and it details exactly what their plan was. And that was to go into Afghanistan, Iraq, and I think they also mentioned Syria, Iran, in that PNAC document. And these were written up before Bush took office the first time.
It's a plan.
And you know, one other thing, Liz, if anybody has any doubts that the government story is real fishy, take the Pentagon, the most surveilled building, they say, probably in the world, and nobody can seem to find a videotape that shows something going into it. Of course, Rumsfeld's slip of the tongue mentioned a missile. There were people that reported, eyewitnesses reported, nothing as large as an airliner. In fact, it, whatever it was that went in left an 18-foot hole. And an airliner has a 123-foot wingspan with an engine on each wing, you know, made of a tempered steel that surely would have put some holes in that outer build, that outer wall of the building.
How would they not know that the plane is coming? The Pentagon doesn't have anybody watching the Pentagon?
Oh, well, you know what, the Pentagon, did you know the Pentagon has missile batteries? Did you know that?
No, I didn't.
Oh, yeah. It's equipped with missile batteries to shoot down anything that's approaching. So isn't it ridiculous
that the
Pentagon could be attacked? Isn't it ridiculous?
It's ridiculous.
There was a fellow working in a gas station across the street. He said minutes after that happened, there were FBI agents in his gas station to confiscate his surveillance tapes.
Now, let me get this straight. There weren't soldiers minutes before the building was attacked, but there were FBI agents minutes after the building was, whatever happened to the building.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah,
that they were that well-equipped to go in there and confiscate surveillance tapes.
Thanks for your call, George.
From a business across the street.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, thank you, Liz.
454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. My toll-free long-distance number is 1-877-920-WGNU. And if you want to email me, do that at revolution@lizbrown.com. That's revolution@lizbrown.com. You want to know another reason why this is a culture of corruption in Washington, D.C.? House and Senate GOP negotiators met behind closed doors, and this was sometime last month. And why did they meet behind closed doors? They didn't have any Democrats in there. To complete a major budget-cutting bill. And they agreed to change the Senate-passed Medicare legislation that would save the health insurance industry. Are you ready for this? Are you ready for how much money that the health insurance industry is not going to have to pay? $22 billion over the next 10 years. How would they do this? Well, The Senate's version would have targeted private HMOs participating in Medicare by charging the formula that governs their reimbursement by lowering payments of $26 billion over the next decade. But after lobbying by the health insurance industry, the final version made a critical change that, in effect, eliminated all but the $4 billion of projected savings. The change was made with Republicans from the House and Republicans from the Senate. This is a good example. This is a primary example of the culture of corruption. They meet behind closed doors. Where's a good wiretap when you need one? Why can't we tap them? Okay, we're going to wire. Where's a good wiretap when you need one? I sure would have liked one at that Cheney meeting on energy. That would have been a time. I mean, okay. If we're going to do that, let's start there. Where's a good wiretap when you need one? Where's a good illegal wiretap when you need one? At least we get some good stuff instead of all of these poor schmucks out here who are under surveil by their good government. And they can't do... They aren't going to do anything to hurt this country, and they can't... They don't have the means to do it. These suckers have the means and the intent. We should have the mini microphones in these guys' offices. We're going to talk in the next hour with David Courtright. He's the president of Four Freedoms Foundation, and he's the author of Soldiers in Revolt: The Resistance of GIs and Veterans Against the Vietnam War. And maybe this book will make it clear why there is such opposition to the invasion and occupation of Iraq today. Resistance isn't anything new. So David Courtright is going to be joining us in the next hour to talk about soldiers in revolt. 454-0400 is my phone number, 1-877-920-WGNU. That's my long-distance number. And also my website is lizbrown.com. You need to get to me. We're taking a break.
Update. Dateline San Francisco. The American Civil Liberties Union has won a court case against the FBI and the Transportation Security Administration. The suit was brought against those two government agencies on behalf of two San Francisco peace activists. Becky Gordon and Janet Adams publish a newsletter called War Times that is critical of the Bush administration. 3 years ago, they were stopped at the airport in San Francisco and not allowed to board an airplane because they were considered a threat and had made their way onto a no-fly list. They had the ACLU help them find out how they and other people get placed on that list and used the Freedom of Information Act to gain access to some 300 pages of censored documents. They did find out that there were only 16 names on the list as of September 11, 2001, but now there are around 80,000. It was also revealed that being placed on a no-fly list depends on two things. Do intelligence agencies consider a person a threat to civil aviation? And if the agency making the request to place a person on the list has enough information to identify the person detained at the check-in counter? A memo from 2002 indicated that the Transportation Safety Administration was getting over 24 calls a day from airlines concerning passengers who might have been wrongly identified. Another memo from 2003 indicated that religious profiling was also being used to single out people for extra investigations. The ACLU received a judgment of $200,000 to pay for legal costs in the matter. This is your wake-up call, Global News Update.
I know the place to shop for all your appliance needs. Sears, 3425 Union, black-owned and black-operated, Jerome Williams. Sears carries the top six appliance brands, Kenmore, Whirlpool, Maytag, GE, Amana, and Frigidaire. Sears also has the latest in electronics, TVs, VCRs, camcorders, and DVD players. Now, if you find a lower price on an identical branded item with the same features currently available at another local retail store, Sears will match that price plus give you 10% off the difference. That's the Sears Price Match Plus policy. So, save yourself a trip. Stop at Sears first and get a low price promise plus a great selection for your home and garden needs. It's all at your local Sears store right there at 3425 Union, Jerome Williams, 389-9700.
I'm Dr. Laura Schlesinger. Join me from 2 to 4 every Monday through Friday afternoon on Radio Free St. Louis, AM 920 WGNU. And stay tuned for today's solutions with David Lenihan from 4 to 6.
It's been a strange winter. Warm one week and cold the next. All that stress is hard on your roof. Better call Phil Person Roofing at 361-7127 and get it checked ahead of the spring rains. You can get a 15-year warranty on the new modified rubber roof made by GAF, the largest roofing manufacturer in America. Finance that new roof, commercial or residential, with your Visa or MasterCard. Always free estimates. Philip Person Roofing, 361-7127.
He's back.
By popular demand and because it's so right on time, we're putting President Bush back on the couch. Yes, Dr. Justin Frank returns to the next edition of Mondays at 9 for another analysis of the chief executive. Is the domestic spying issue indicative of a controlling personality? Does the president completely depend on Dick Cheney, or is he merely a puppet deciding who pulls the strings? So many more issues have cropped up that we decided another session was in order. Don't miss Dr. Justin Frank, author of Bush on the Couch, our special guest on the next edition of Mondays at 9.
Bye.
Real life,
On the Cutting Edge, it's the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Wake Up Call. 454-0400 is my phone number, 1-877-920-WGNU. You need to get up, you need to get to me. We have all kinds of stuff to talk about. 454-0400 is my phone number. I was checking out a website, trying to get my finger on the pulse of what folks are thinking out here. And I checked out one website that is called themselves the Aggressive Progressives. Clueless Democrats, both in Congress and even in the progressive blogosphere, are about to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory once again. How? By letting the Republicans turn the scandal of the century into an inside-the-beltway battle over ethics reform. Jesus. Let me get to a car phone here. John.
Yeah, Liz?
Yes.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I had a comment about an earlier caller. You made a comment about the flight recorders being recovered. And he was implying, or it sounded like he was implying, that the government had something to do with it, that that's why they're trying to cover it up. But does he really think that the government would deliberately do something like that when it hurt the airline industry and business as a whole?
Do you really think
that they would do that deliberately?
Have you ever heard of the Gulf of Tonkin?
No, I haven't.
Check that out to find out how far your good government would go in order to pursue a political agenda. Sometimes the philosophy of the government is sometimes you got to break a few eggs. No big deal. We'll catch it up. We'll do all right. If your agenda is to make certain that that power that was removed from the government during the Nixon administration, that the executive branch was weakened during the Nixon administration, if your desire is to return that type of complete and absolute power back to the executive branch, got to break a few eggs to make an omelet, buddy. Hello?
I just don't think that would be suicide.
No, it's not.
To hurt,
nobody's
to hurt
dead.
So much business. I mean, do you know how bad the economy fell after that?
And
they would deliberately do that. Just
and how are we doing now?
Gain power.
And how are we doing now?
How are they going to gain power if there is no country to gain power from?
How is the economy doing now?
It's doing better, a lot better.
So then, where's this?
We're going under.
Where's the suicide part of it? Where's the suicide part of it? If we follow your line of thinking, they wouldn't do it because it's suicide. Okay, follow my line of thinking. They did it, and nobody has died. It hasn't been suicide.
I'm not talking about somebody dying. That's the literal part. I'm talking about the business part.
And I'm saying that the businesses have not died.
The business went bankrupt.
And how are they doing now?
Everybody was afraid to fly.
And how are they doing?
How many jobs were lost because of that?
Do you know what a long-term plan is, a long-range plan is?
Yes, I do.
Okay. A long-range plan means that you have to break a few eggs to make an omelet. The airlines are flying. People are back in the air, aren't they? Sure, there was a short-term problem, but it's a long-range plan. And it hasn't turned out like you said. If it was going to be suicide, then we would all businesses would still be dead right now. It's a long-term plan. Short-term goals, long-term plans. Why wouldn't they? And read about the Gulf of Tonkin. Read about that. And then come back and talk to me about what our government wouldn't do to further their agenda.
right.
All right now. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. Jerry, good morning.
Good morning, Liz. How you doing?
I'm outstanding.
I don't know why these ignorant ramers, white people don't understand that their government don't give a damn about them either. This country is being overthrown. They got a long-term plan. They're doing it in perps. And by the time the people wake up and realize what's happening to them, they be so far down in a hole, they don't know what daylight look like.
All right. Thanks, Jerry. 454-0400 is my phone number. Christine, good morning.
Good morning. It's not surprising that you would bring up Tricky Dick and his and the Gulf of Tonkin. I have a little something I'd like to say to your listening audience. You said the last time a United States president claimed that he had alone had the unilateral power to tap phones without a judicial order, that incident ended in the national disgrace known as the Watergate scandal. Now, this is the same thing that Tricky Dick did that this W, that's spelled D-U-I-A, is trying to do now. But at the time of Tricky Dick, I believe we had a Congress that stepped up to the plate and served as the essential check and balances to preserve democracy for future generations of America. But now we don't have a Congress that's going to step up to the plate. They, just like you said, they don't have a backbone.
Thanks for
and
your
they
call.
Don't use it.
All right, Christine, thank you. 454-0400. Scott.
Yeah, it looks like this guy was the head of the mining commission or something for the federal.
What's his name, Brownie?
I think it was David Wu or something. He wants to be. He was at the Senate confirmation hearing, and they were asking him questions. And all of a sudden, you know, I guess about the mining accidents, and all of a sudden he got up and left.
Mm-hmm. I bet he did.
He just got up and left, and Senator Spencer said, "Don't you realize that we have to confirm you for this job?"
No, he's been watching the tapes of other people. He's been watching the tapes of other people getting gigs. And if Brownie didn't have to go through that kind of scrutiny, why should he have to go through that kind of scrutiny?
Yeah, I see what you mean.
You know, I mean, he figured, and they told him that the Democrats are not going to ask you any questions, that the Republicans are going to let you slide, that people are, if this is your job for the taking. And he wasn't prepared. And it's not even like they were asking him major, hard, tough questions.
Yeah, he said he had other things to do.
I bet he did. Kicking his dog being the top of the agenda.
Also, it looks like Hamas may have won the election.
Hamas has won the election. Now what?
Freedom and democracy.
Now what? Now what is this administration going to do? Hamas is in control. The people have spoken. Democracy has worked.
Freedom and democracy.
All right, now. Now what? Now what's this? What's our country, our government going to do? Scott McClellan was saying. Pardon? What did you say? Yeah, there you go. There you go. Thanks for your call, Scott. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. We'll be back the next hour with David Courtright. He is the president of Four Freedoms Foundation and the author of Soldiers in Revolt. Oh, yeah. I'm Liz Brown. This is the Wake Up Call. Stay with us.
Progress. You pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound. that's below. That's a low major.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell the brothers how to listen.
The hard truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more people than ever.
WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis. 920 on your AM dial.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Daria Aldinger.
We lost that, okay? And we congratulate those who won the elections.
A major defeat for Palestinian Fatah Party. They lost most of the government seats to Hamas. That's Saab Erekat, the chief Palestinian negotiator, among the party officials stepping down. Now, Hamas says it will not negotiate with Israel and that it has no plans to end its armed resistance to the occupation. And that concerns UN Secretary General Kofi Annan.
To carry weapons and participate in democratic process and sit in parliament, there is a fundamental contradiction. And I'm sure they are thinking about that, too.
Hamas said it has plans to have a coalition government. Fatah says it wants no part of it. Another company may have lost some of your important information, ABC News national correspondent Jim Hickey says. This time, it's a subsidiary of American Express.
Ameriprise, which focuses on retirement investments for baby boomers, says a laptop full of sensitive information was stolen from an employee's car. Spokesman Steve Connolly says the data was not encrypted.
The information should not have been removed from the corporate office on a laptop without proper data security measures.
The data on the stolen laptop included Ameriprise account numbers for 158,000 customers and social security numbers for 70,000 financial advisors. The employee has been fired. Jim Hickey, ABC News.
President Bush has a little advice for Ford. Figure your troubles out yourself.
Ford and GM won't find a financial bailout or even much sympathy in the Oval Office. President Bush tells the Wall Street Journal, Detroit should develop a product that is relevant and not look to Washington for help with their balance sheets or heavy pension obligations. Chrysler got a bailout in the 70s with government loans. That's unlikely this time.
ABC's Ann Compton. A hostage situation is over in Exeter, California. The last of 8 hostages freed. The suspect now in custody. This is ABC News.
You buy ginger ale at Walmart's everyday low prices. It arrived on a Walmart truck and traveled over 140 miles from a Walmart distribution center, where it was processed by over 1,000 Walmart associates and moved over 10 miles of conveyor, with over 230,000 cases that same day. Why send ginger ale through one of the most efficient distribution systems ever conceived? To keep prices low for you. And we're all proud to be a part of it. Walmart. Always low prices. Always.
Walmart and Sam's Club have teamed up with Humana to provide you with all the information you need about the new Medicare prescription drug benefit. Enroll today. Log on to walmart.com/Medicare or talk with your Walmart pharmacist or Humana sales representative. Walmart and Sam's Club pharmacies accept all Medicare prescription drug benefit plans. Medicare-approved HMO, PPO, and PFFS plans available to anyone enrolled in Part B and entitled to Part A of Medicare through age or disability. Copayment, service area, and benefit limitations may apply.
A Florida family has lost 7 children. They were riding in a car that was smashed between a tractor trailer and a school bus on a road in Lake Butler.
We see a lot of bad wrecks, but whenever youngins are involved, and you know, you got youngins yourself, it adds to it.
Truck driver Eddie Jackson saw the crash. Teflon may be about to slip into history. The government's urging DuPont and other companies to phase out a chemical used to make it. Several possible health risks.
This is the right thing to do, and we're going to move forward with this.
That's the EPA Susan Hazen. The first survivor champ is roughing it in jail. He's been convicted of tax evasion. Reporter Mark Chase in Providence.
The government says it felt Richard Hatch posed a flight risk when the jury announced the guilty verdicts against him. That's why they asked to keep Hatch behind bars until sentencing. Asked about any possible charges, such as perjury, being filed against Hatch, spokesman Tom Connell says that will be addressed at the sentencing on April 28th.
I'm Daria Albinger, ABC News.
St. Louis, this is Patrick Ryan-Meyer with your WGNU news update for the 7 o'clock hour.
In the news this Thursday, three St. Charles police officers are on routine administrative leave after fatally shooting a suspect yesterday. Police say 56-year-old Richard Stone was a suspect in a Tuesday night holdup at a mobile station on 5th Street in St. Charles. When detectives went to Stone's O'Fallon home to arrest him, Stone allegedly pointed a weapon at them. That's when three officers opened fire, killing Stone. The shooting is being called justified. St. Louis City Police Chief Joe Mokwa says despite the fact that crime is up nearly 2% from 2004, he is pleased by the 2005 crime statistics. Mokwa says crime is down more than 21% since 1995. He says murder, robbery, and rape all increased in 2005, with the number of reported rape cases increasing by 61%. There were 131 murders in the city in 2005, a nearly 15% increase from the 114 in 2004. The city recorded more than 47,000 overall crimes last year. Locust Street is going to become a two-way street. St. Louis Alderman Michael McMillan made that announcement at a press club lunch and forum yesterday. McMillan says this will allow for better traffic flow and support businesses and residents in the area.
Unfortunately, with it being a one-way street for no reason at this time, it is difficult sometimes for people to get to various points because they're not familiar with the area, and describing it to them does more confusion than good in some cases.
This is one of a series of initiatives for the rebirth of the Locust business in Loft District. Finally this hour, it's only January, but some people may be feeling stress over doing their taxes. Dr. Kathleen Gurney, a tax expert and author of the book Your Money Personality, says that feeling of anxiousness and dread is commonly referred to as taxitis. Gurney says the key to overcoming taxitis is to be prepared and not wait until the last minute to do your taxes. She says just because you do your taxes in February doesn't mean you have to pay in February. This WGNU News Report is brought to you by State Farm Insurance. Switch to State Farm and your great driving record could help you get great discounts. Talk to Agent Janet Andre Vinciguerra in St. Charles today and get your reward here and now. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. That's your look at local news for the 7 o'clock hour. I'm Patrick Brandmeier for Radio Free St. Louis.
Good morning, St. Louis. 7 minutes after the hour, 7 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Wolf. This hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by AccountTemps. Northbound 55 at Herculane and McNutt has an accident. Left lane is blocked and jammed through Route A. Northbound 55 from Lindbergh. No sign of an earlier reported debris on the roadway. Eastbound 44 from 141 to Watson looks good. Eastbound 40 at Maryville Center all the way to Mason Road. Look for slow traffic there. Eastbound 70 from Belleville to First City Expressway is on the move. Northbound 270 is slow from Gravoy 344. Westbound 270 from Bell Fountain all the way into New Force. And look for no problems to report. Eastbound 70 from Bryan to 79. Look for heavy volume there. Eastbound 40 from Spady. Glenburg is heavy as well. Westbound 5570 from 64 onto the PSB. Look for slow traffic there. Westbound 64 onto the ramp to 5570. Look for slow traffic. Westbound Kingbridge traffic at Laclede's Landing looks good. And northbound Route 3, those approaches onto the Poplar Street Bridge, you can expect normal traffic in your 7 a.m. commute. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by AccountTemps, the world's leader in specialized financial staffing. When you need temporary accounting or financial help, call AccountTemps. Now taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Saturday. Mostly sunny today, a high in the mid-50s this evening, not quite as cool. Partly cloudy with a low in the upper 30s. Friday, mostly cloudy with a high in the upper 50s. Friday evening, mostly cloudy. Once again, a 40% chance of showers with a low in the lower 40s. And then on Saturday, showers are likely to continue with a high in the lower 50s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 29 degrees. Lambert Fields reporting 28, both under clear skies. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning wake-up call. As up next, we'll take another look at your traffic and weather in the bottom of the 7 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brother, how can this
was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis.
I will never say that progress has been made. If you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. You pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's the low knee.
Listen to us, black, white, Jew, Gentile, Asian, Latino, and we are brothers and sisters in a long and difficult struggle.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown. My number here is 454-0400. My long distance number is 1-877-920-WGNU. And if you want a toll free long distance me, do that at 1-877-920-WGNU. Don't forget, this show, the Wake Up Call, is archived daily. That means every day on WhiteRoseSociety.org. So if you missed an hour, that's okay. You can't listen at work without getting in trouble. That's okay, too. You don't get to a computer until you get to work. I understand. Go on over to WhiteRoseSociety.org and catch up on the shows that you didn't have a chance to catch or listen to another one of your favorite shows, WhiteRoseSociety.org. And also check out the website, LizBrown.com, L-I-Z-Z-Brown.com. You need to get up. You need to get to me. We have all kinds of stuff to talk about. I was talking this morning about a story that came out over the AP. Talking about the, what are they calling it, the thin green line, that our troops are stretched so much in Afghanistan, the troop size, how many, what do they call it, boots on the ground. Now that the boots on the ground have been stretched thin and thinner. Some have even described it as breaking point. 136-page report commissioned by the Pentagon, written by a retired Army officer. And it talks about the number of soldiers that the Army has been unable to recruit. The 2005 recruiting slump. It's the first time that the Army has missed their goal since 1999. And that's despite bigger enlistment bonuses and despite powerful commercials. I gotta give them their due. There are some powerful new commercials out there that tug at the heartstrings and the purse strings of people watching it to recruit these babies into the military. And I gotta say, the discussion about the missing recruitment has to be also discussed in terms of a resistance. The Army is not hitting their marks, making their numbers, reaching their goals. They're not doing any of that. Because the American citizenry, young people, are resisting that pull. And despite this horrible economy, despite the fact that it's never been harder to get a college degree, it's never been more expensive to get a college degree. A college degree has never been so far out of the reach of Americans. And it's not just a college degree, but it's jobs with health care. It's jobs that pay you money, decent, a living wage. Despite all of that, people are resisting the urge, the act of joining the military. Well, resistance in the military is not something new. It didn't just happen. And we need to talk about that. My guest this hour is author of the book, Soldiers in Revolt, GI Resistance During the Vietnam War. My guest joining us from Indiana is David Courtright. David, good morning.
Good morning, Liz. How are you?
I'm outstanding. How are you?
Very well, thanks.
This is a timely, timely book.
Yes. Well, I wrote it 30 years ago after the Vietnam War and wrote about my own experiences in the Army during Vietnam. And so many of us who were in the Army at that time opposed the war and began to speak out against it. And then a year or so ago, I was asked, could I republish the book because it's becoming relevant again? We're now, as you just said, having this experience in Iraq. Again, we have an unpopular war. And again, we're seeing people all throughout the society, including those who are in the military or who are being recruited to the military, who are saying, no, this is not the kind of war that we want to sign up for.
So let's go back. What does resistance look like in the Vietnam War, during the Vietnam War?
Well, it took lots of different forms, Liz. I was involved in a number of soldier anti-war committees. I was stationed at Fort Hamilton in New York and then at Fort Bliss in Texas. And at both of those bases, we had committees of active duty soldiers, just like you would anywhere else, in a college or in a community. But we were active duty soldiers, and we would meet after duty hours, usually off base, and plan our activities against the war. We had an anti-war newspaper that we circulated on the base, and we organized petitions among fellow soldiers that called for ending the war. And we also participated in some of the demonstrations that would take place, well, when I was near New York, and then out in Texas, we organized our own demonstration. So there was a very active, organized dissent movement inside the military.
But what was the atmosphere for that dissent? Could you compare and contrast the atmosphere for the dissent that you engaged in then and what the atmosphere for dissent is like now?
Well, it was quite interesting, Liz, because this is 1968, 69 was when I was in, through 71. And by the time I got into the Army in 68, there was already widespread disillusionment, morale was low, many soldiers opposed the war. And so when we would go around the base and ask for contributions or to sign up petitions or to read the newspaper, many of our fellow soldiers said, yeah, right on, you know, thanks, brother, you know, we were with you. So there was a general atmosphere of really resistance, if you will. Not everybody was willing to take a risk, you know, and go to a demonstration or sign a petition, but there was a lot of sympathy for what we were trying to do. And I haven't been around as many military folks today, of course, as I was when I was in the military, but my impression is that there's a similar atmosphere. You know, people do their duty, they're patriotic, they're honorable, they're well-trained in the military today. But there's a strong feeling on the part of many people that this mission is wrong, that we need to get out of Iraq. We should probably never have gone in there. And that the sooner we can get out of there, the better for certainly us in the U.S. and probably also better for the people in Iraq. So there's, a strong feeling that this is the wrong war and that morale is definitely sinking. And certainly, if you look at these recruitment numbers, it's strong evidence, as you were saying in the lead-in, that a lot of young people are turning their backs on these very appealing recruitment pitches that come from the military, but just saying, you know, this, I'm not signing up for this kind of a duty. This kind of a war is not what we need. And it looks like there's no end in sight for the American policy over there. So I'm not surprised that we're seeing growing amounts of resistance. It's taking a slightly different form today than it did back 30 years ago, of course. You don't have anti-war demonstrations and anti-war newspapers inside the military now as you did then. But we are seeing, for example, lots of email traffic and lots of websites that are popping up with soldiers articulating their concerns and expressing their dissent.
But we're also having, I read an article not too long ago about the military's attempt in the name of not wanting to give information or comfort strategies out to the enemy. Our government or the military is telling the soldiers they're not allowing the soldiers to do as much emailing as they were. Blogs. They told them that they can't set up their own blogs.
That's right.
Now, in terms of back in 1968, you had it within the military.
That's right.
The atmosphere was different than even within the your superior officers and the military itself, because in today's Iraq, in today's war, there seems to be a greater intolerance on the part of the military for any of this.
Yeah, that's right. And your interesting point you make about the emails. Right after the invasion in the summer of 2003, there was really a flood of emails started coming out of Iraq and, you know, Kuwait and nearby bases. The troops saying, you know, what's going on here? There was, in fact, you may have remembered, they interviewed some of the troops one day. I think it was ABC, Good Morning America, and one of the troops said, if Donald Rumsfeld were here, I'd fire his ass.
Yes, yes.
And so they cut that off, as you say. They're limiting the amount of email. They're blocking sites, preventing the creation of blogs and that sort of thing. So it's becoming more difficult. You're right. And there's definitely a more repressive atmosphere. Another thing we're seeing here, Liz, because so many of our all-volunteer troops are married, the families are playing a much more important role. More than half of the troops today are married, and so families play a bigger role. And we've seen many of those family members also speak out. Even in very conservative bases in the South, family members got together and said, our troops are not getting the support they need in terms of the armor, the kind of equipment, the proper vehicles. We're not getting that over there. And secondly, we just have doubts about this whole mission. And again, the military has tried to crack down on those families. They're trying to claim that this is supposedly helping the terrorists. So there's definitely a more repressive atmosphere on the part of the military today, probably because they know the history from 30 years ago, and they know that as the people in the military themselves start to speak out and dissent and understand the fact that this mission can't work, then they know that that policy is definitely going to come to an end, that people will not stand for it anymore in the United States.
Well, one of the things I'd like for you to talk about that you discussed in your book is the GI resistance in Europe.
Yeah.
Talk to us about that.
Well, it was everywhere the military is based, there was resistance against the war in Vietnam. In Germany, it was quite extensive. In those days, there were 300,000 troops in Germany. And we saw a couple of groups form up, including a group of African-American troops around Stuttgart and Karlsruhe, where they actually organized large demonstrations on base.
Thousands of people.
Yeah, exactly. Thousands of troops who came together, organized, and had a rally. And then at one point, dozens of them were arrested by the military. So you had a very widespread movement in Africa, in Europe among the African American troops that was linked to anti-war civilians in the German population. So the Germans who were opposed to the war recognized that American troops were their allies, in a sense, in opposing this war, and they provided support and help to the American troops who were trying to speak out against the war.
Could something like that, could an organization of that nature take place today?
Well, I think it's needed, Liz, and this is one of the things that I've tried to emphasize. When I was in the Army in 68 through 71, we benefited from and needed civilian support. You know, when you're in the military, you're at the mercy of the military command. You don't have much time available, and you have to constantly face the harassment from the officers. And when you try to speak out, you will face some kind of punishment. And it's a courageous act to do so. And those troops who speak out need the support of civilians. You need support in terms of legal assistance. When we spoke out, we got in trouble with the military. We hired lawyers. We needed lawyers to help us and defend us. There's also things just like helping with getting publicity out and telling the story of the soldiers. You know, they don't have time inside the military to be communication specialists. Helping with the internet communications, the problems that they're having today, even just providing easily accessible internet and blog capabilities. So there's lots of ways in which the people inside the military can be supported. And those of us who want to try to bring this war to an end should recognize that many of the people in the military agree with us. They'd like to see the war ended. And if we could organize ways to support the soldiers in speaking out, that might speed the end of this illegal and unjust war.
But, again, soldiers, black soldiers, were able to organize in Germany, were able to have meetings where thousands of people came to speak about the unjust and illegal and needless war in Vietnam. Could that happen today? I understand it needs to, but could it happen today? Do you see it happening?
Well, I don't know, Liz. It needs to. It could. I know there's a group right now in Germany that's working with our troops. I've been in touch with them, and they've helped several dozen soldiers get discharges and to communicate with the press. It's a small project of basically one person over there working with one of the church groups, but they are trying to help the soldiers in Germany. Of course, today we don't have, I think the number of U.S. troops in Germany is down to 50, 75,000, something like that. So it's much smaller, but nonetheless, a lot of the troops who are coming back from Iraq go to Germany, especially for medical treatment. There's a big medical treatment center there at Landstuhl. And so there are ways in which we can support and should support the troops.
Well, another one of the things that you talk about in your book, Soldiers in Revolt, GI Resistance During the Vietnam War, is it wasn't just that there were protests out there. It wasn't just that there was organizing of soldiers that stood in opposition to the war in Vietnam. But the resistance movement actually had an impact on some of the military forces in Vietnam, in Indochina.
That's right.
Talk to us about that, please.
Yeah, this is, I think, one of the least known but potentially most important chapters in the whole history of the Vietnam War. Essentially, the U.S. Army ground to a halt by 1969 or 70. It ceased to function as an effective fighting force, and that was mostly due to the resistance inside the military among the troops. There was widespread rebellion. There was this terrible new word that entered the lexicon, fragging.
Mm-hmm.
Fragging means attacking a commanding officer with a frag grenade, and the Army's own statistics show that there were more than 550 fragging attacks against officers and senior sergeants by the troops during just a 2.5-year period in Vietnam. More than 80 senior officers and sergeants were killed by their own men in this fragging. So this is an extreme, terrible manifestation of how much resistance there was. And there was a whole protocol around fragging. If you talk to vets who were over there, they'll tell you. There was first, when an officer who was trying to get medals by pushing the men in the field, or who was imposing restrictions on the troops, or who was racist toward the troops, the men would start to react. And the first thing would be to just put a grenade on his bunk.
Mm.
That was the warning. And if the behavior didn't change, then maybe there'd be a frag that would be set off. And still, if it didn't change, then they might do the real thing.
Mm.
So there was this whole kind of subterranean war of the men against the officers to try to prevent racial injustice and to prevent combat patrols that no one believed in any longer. So that was a horrendous but important manifestation. The other thing, Liz, was...
And I need you to hold that thought,
sure.
David, because we have to take a break.
Sure.
I'm talking to David Cordwright. He's the president of the Fourth Freedom Forum, and he's the author of Soldiers in Revolt. And we are talking about that this morning, Soldiers in Revolt, GI Resistance During the Vietnam War. I'm Liz Brown. This is the Wake Up Call. Stay with us. And we're going to give away a copy of this book in just a few minutes, so stay with us.
It does not know defeat. I feel it high and know the strength of truth. In every soul, there is a memory, a standing tall, the proudest we could be. I cannot fall, for I recall we were born.
Good morning, St. Louis. 31 minutes after the hour, 7 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton. We will look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by your Greater St. Louis Area Toyota Dealers. Westbound 44 between Washington and 50. Look for road construction going on there. Eastbound 44 from Bowles to 270. No problems there. Eastbound 40 is slow from 141 to Mason Road. Eastbound 70 from Mid Rivers Mall all the way to Blanchet Bridge. Looks good. Northbound 270 from Gravois to 44. Look for stop and go traffic. Eastbound 70 from T.R. Hughes all the way into 79. Look for very heavy volume there. Eastbound 40 from Spady to Lindbergh. Heavy volume. Eastbound 40 between McKnight and Brentwood. Look for slow traffic. Westbound 40 between McCausland and Hanley. Look for stop and go traffic. Westbound 5570 from Exchange on to the PSB looks good. And westbound 64 before the 5570 split, you can expect slow traffic. Westbound Kingbridge traffic before Laclede's Landing looks good. And northbound Route 3, those approaches onto the Poplar Street Bridge, traffic is building this hour. That is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by your Greater St. Louis Area Toyota Dealers. Toyota owners, winterize your car at St. Louis Metro Toyota Dealer. Radiator drain and fill, visual inspection, and battery check, all for just $39.95. That's Toyota value. See dealer for details. Now, taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and Saturday, mostly sunny, high in the mid-50s this evening. Not quite as cool, partly cloudy, low in the mid-30s for Friday. Mostly cloudy, high in the upper 50s. Friday evening, mostly cloudy, a 40% chance of rain with a low in the lower 40s. And then on Saturday, look forward to showers likely, a high in the lower 50s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 30 degrees. Lambert Fields reporting 31, both under clear skies. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning Wake Up Call. It's up next. We'll take another look at your news, traffic, and weather in the 8 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
It'll change everything you know about AM 920. It's coming to WGNU Monday, January 30th.
You want your preschooler to be ready for school. Trinity Tabernacle Child Development Center is ready to help you prepare your preschooler not only for school, but also for life. Trinity Tabernacle Child Development Center is an outreach of Trinity Tabernacle, Assembly of God in Bridgeton. Your child, age 2 to 4, receives a non-denominational Bible curriculum with Bible stories, songs, arts and crafts, plus lessons in numbers, science, arts, and phonics to help prepare him or her for kindergarten. Your child will also grow personally, socially, educationally, and spiritually every day as a unique individual created by God. Call Christine at 314-291-8839 to learn more about Trinity Tabernacle Child Development Center and to register your child. Open Monday through Friday from 6:30 a.m. to 6 p.m. Trinity Tabernacle Child Development Center, 11950 Mark Twain Drive in Bridgeton, 314-291-8839. Serving the community since 1979.
We're waiting for your calls at WGNU. From the local calling area, just dial 314-454-0400. If you're calling long distance, the toll-free number is 1-877-920-WGNU. If you are calling long distance from a car phone or want to use a particular name on the air, please let us know when you call. Get into Talk Radio with a Difference. That's Radio Free St. Louis, AM 920, WGNU.
The Missouri Department of Conservation will conduct an introduction to backpacking class. The program will be held Thursday, February 2nd from 6 to 9 p.m. at the Hangus Shooting Range and Outdoor Recreation Center in High Ridge. Learn about backpacking skills, basic equipment, campsite selection, and places to go. The event is family friendly. Register by January 30th. Call 636-441-4554. News to you from WGNU.
He's back.
By popular demand and because it's so right on time, we're putting President Bush back on the couch. Yes, Dr. Justin Frank returns to the next edition of Mondays at 9 for another analysis of the chief executive. Is the domestic spying issue indicative of a controlling personality? Does the president completely depend on Dick Cheney, or is he merely a puppet deciding who pulls the strings? So many more issues have cropped up that we decided another session was in order. Don't miss Dr. Justin Frank, author of Bush on the Couch, our special guest on the next edition of Mondays at 9.
This is Liz Brown. I'm talking to David Courtwright. He is the author of Soldiers in Revolt, and we are going to give out a copy of Soldiers in Revolt, GI Resistance to the Vietnam War, to the seventh caller at 454-6660. Be the seventh caller and get your copy of Soldiers in Revolt. I'm Liz Brown.
Real life, on the cutting edge. It's the award-winning wake-up call with Liz Brown.
Down by the river, taking off my shoes, jumping in the water, washing away these blues.
Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown. My guest this hour is author David Courtwright. He is also the president of the Fourth Freedom Forum, author of Soldiers in Revolt, GI Resistance During the Vietnam War, and we have our winner for that book. You can get off the phones now. We have our winner. David, welcome back.
Thank you, Liz.
And you were in the process of talking to us about a type of resistance that most Americans are unfamiliar with during the Vietnam War, fracking being one of them.
Yes, the way in which the whole Army and Marine Corps in Vietnam really ground to a halt, how the military just ceased to function because of the widespread resistance, rebellion within the ranks. And another dramatic manifestation of that, Liz, was the widespread development of mutinies. Combat refusals inside the military. When I was doing research initially, I knew of some incidents where whole units had refused orders to go down a particular trail to engage a particular target in Vietnam. And in fact, there was one incident that was famously filmed on CBS Evening News showing the troops. They were ordered to go down a trail. They said, no way. And they sat down and they had a discussion with the officer and they decided to go another way. But as I did the research, I found striking evidence that this phenomenon was very widespread. I had found about a dozen specific incidents that I could identify. But there was a book published some years after the initial edition of Soldiers in Revolt, which was based on actual unit archives of the combat divisions that were in Vietnam. And they found that in the 1st Cavalry Division, which is one of the premier army units, there were 35 instances of combat refusal in the year 1970. And that was just one division. There were nine combat divisions in Vietnam at that time. So if you just extrapolate out the numbers, you can easily assume that there were literally hundreds of instances of combat refusal in the armed forces in Vietnam during the peak years of the war, 69, 70, 68.
When did we find out about these acts of resistance? Did we find out contemporaneously, or did we find out subsequent to the war?
Mostly, Liz, we found out after the war. As I say, while it was going on, some of us who were in the military, who were keeping our eye out for this sort of thing, found evidence. And we would talk to colleagues, talk to guys who were coming back, and realize that this was happening. But There was never really a full picture presented. And the truth of the matter is, Liz, we still don't know today. This one report that I cited, you know, this is legit. This comes from an analysis of the Army's own unit archives written by a highly decorated combat officer who was in Vietnam. So it's very reliable. But no one that I'm aware of has looked specifically at this phenomenon of the combat refusals, of the mutinies, of the unwillingness of troops to engage in military operations in Vietnam that was very widespread in 69 and 70 and meant that really the military had become useless, that the United States, even if we had wanted to continue the war for a few more years, it was not possible.
Well, the military had an option for any soldier that engages in a mutiny. It's real easy. You take him to trial, and you try him, and you find him guilty. The Army didn't exercise this option.
Oh, no, because it was too widespread. You see, by 69 and 70, certainly, the military is falling apart. The very interesting thing was those of us who spoke out for against the war, against racist officers, for more justice for troops, in 1965 and 66, when this movement first began, those individuals who spoke out were sent immediately to Vietnam. You know, that was the punishment. Mm-hmm. You were going to go to the front of the combat lines. By 68 and 69...
That didn't work out too good.
They didn't do that anymore.
Well, it didn't work out too good. You don't send people like that.
In fact, you know, I was singled out as a troublemaker when I was at Fort Hamilton, New York, and they, quote, punished us by transferring us to different bases. And there were a whole group of us, so about eight or nine of us, who were transferred out as troublemakers. And I looked at the list, and I won. Not a single one went to Vietnam.
Because
they all sent us to places like Alaska. I went out to El Paso, Texas, places that were fairly distant from the big cities where they hoped we wouldn't cause too much trouble.
And it's hard to organize in Alaska with only 8 hours of sunlight during a month. So that was their strategy. They wouldn't send you to a place that was already exploding.
Right. Yeah.
And you described what... A kind of a grisly protocol, the protocol with fragging. When you look at at different countries, sometimes countries have rituals that are the same, but it may change because it's in a different region of the country, but it's the same type of ritual. Did it change in Vietnam, the protocol for fragging? Did somehow all of the soldiers find out and know what the protocol was?
Yeah, I think there was a very strong subculture, or maybe a set of interlocking subcultures in the military in those days. And there was a communications mechanism that was evolving through that. A lot of it was around drugs. Some of it was around race. You know, the black brothers would get together. A lot of the white troops who were smoking pot and whatever would get together in their own circles. Sometimes those circles would overlap because they'd maybe like to get together and party. And through those kinds of channels, the kind of resistance culture, if you will, against the military, countercultural, counter-establishment, these ways of fighting back, of asserting your dignity against an insane situation, they were discussed, they were communicated, and it became the ways in which troops acted then in their behavior with their commanders.
You just used the phrase asserting your dignity. How were the dignities of the soldiers attacked during the execution of the war in Vietnam?
Well, it was the whole process was dehumanization. I remember vividly when I went in to basic training. I wasn't political. I hadn't thought about the war at all. I was just caught in the draft, and there I was. And just the dehumanization of the process of basic training, and they especially would demean the troops who maybe weren't quite as strong as the others. The black guys got more harassment than the white guys. And there was a constant reference to the Vietnamese as dinks, slopes, gooks, all of this demeaning racist language. And the whole command experience was such that they were preparing us for this extremely difficult, dehumanizing experiencing of killing people who we had no argument with. None of us knew anything about the Vietnamese. They were sending us over to this country we had never probably even heard about in many cases. And to force people into that kind of an experience, the military has to degrade you and demean you and break down your personality. so that you will become a robot, an automaton that just follows orders. But the truth is, it didn't work. For a lot of us, you know, we weren't prepared or willing to be broken down in that way.
And we have to take a break. I'm talking to David Cordwright. He's the president of the Fourth Freedom Forum. He's also the author of Soldiers in Revolt, GI Resistance During the Vietnam War. This is Liz Brown, The Wake-Up Call. We're taking a break. We'll be right back.
The Wake Up Call Global News Update is brought to you this hour by
Seven Signs Masonry. Whatever your masonry needs, they do all brickwork. These are the best hands in the business. Seven Signs Masonry, 618-338-2871. That's 618-338-2871. Seven Signs Masonry.
This is your Wake Up Call Global News Update. Dateline Mexico City. A Mexican government agency says it's going to start providing maps to Mexican citizens who want to cross into the United States illegally. The maps will clearly show main roads and places where water is stored. The idea is to try and cut down the number of people who are dying when they sneak into the country. Last year, at least 500 people died on such excursions. The two countries are currently at odds over a plan by the United States to build a large fence across parts of the border. And Dateline London. 15 British soldiers who have served in Iraq have filed suit against the British Defense Ministry. The men claim they're suffering from medical negligence. They say the military is not addressing adequately the horrors that the war created on their lives. The widow of a British soldier who committed suicide after returning home is also expected to bring a lawsuit as well. A series of medical reports, including one from the Walter Reed Army Institute of Research, will likely supplement their claims. That particular report says that one out of every five American soldiers who comes back is likely suffering post-traumatic stress. One of the treatments being offered by military doctors in the United States is prescribing ecstasy tablets, which are supposed to free their minds from flashbacks and nightmares. This has received FDA approval following research carried out at a medical facility in South Carolina. The British lawsuit also states that although reservists experience the same type of stress in battle as do regular soldiers, they are not entitled to any treatment from military facilities because they're in the reserve. A British special assault trooper killed his 10-year-old son who was terminally ill after he came back from the war. Another 20-year-old reserve private in Britain hanged himself at his parents' home while he was on leave. This is your Wake Up Call Global News Update, brought to you by
Seven Signs Masonry. Whatever your masonry needs, they do all brickwork. These are the best hands in the business. Seven Signs Masonry, 618-338-2871. That's 618-338-2871. Seven Signs Masonry. I have two announcements for you. This Sunday at 10 a.m. at the Muhammad Mosque, Minister Donna Farrakhan, the daughter of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, will be speaking. Come and listen to what she has to say. It's free admission this Sunday at 10 a.m. Doors open at 9:30. That's at the Muhammad Mosque, number 28 at 1408 North Kings Highway. You saw her introduce her father at the historic 10th anniversary commemoration of the Million Man March. Come out and hear what she has to say. Minister Donna Farrakhan, Sunday, 10 a.m. at Muhammad Mosque, number 28, 1408 North Kings Highway. And also, you need to know the truth about the Matrix. How? Well, you can play a game and figure that out. And you can do that Sunday, February 5th at the History Museum. And you can also find out how you can be an entrepreneur, too. How you can reach in and touch that inner inventor in you. Come on out and learn how to start your own business and learn how to play the truth about the Matrix. You need to come on out this Sunday, February 5th, from 2 to 5. And for more information, call 869-4222. That's 869-4222. That's February 5th at the History Museum at Lindell and DeBolivar.
It's the biggest change at WGNU in 30 years. And it's coming Monday, January 30th.
I know the place to shop for all your appliance needs. Sears, 3425 Union, black owned and black operated, Jerome Williams. Sears carries the top six appliance brands, Kenmore, Whirlpool, Maytag, GE, Amana, and Frigidaire. Sears also has the latest in electronics, TVs, VCRs, camcorders, and DVD players. Now, if you find a lower price on an identical branded item with the same features currently available at another local retail store, Sears will match that price plus give you 10% off the difference. That's the Sears Price Match Plus policy. So, save yourself a trip. Stop at Sears first and get a low price promise plus a great selection for your home and garden needs. It's all at your local Sears store right there at 3425 Union, Jerome Williams, 389-9700.
Scientists and doctors are agreeing more and more that diet can determine whether a person lives a long, healthy life or a life full of unnecessary disease and even death.
I have diabetes. And after gradually changing my diet and getting more exercise, I've noticed my sugar level has become stable and my feet don't swell as much.
My blood pressure has been high for 3 years. Once I stopped eating salt and slowed down on eating oily foods, my blood pressure has gotten back to normal.
It seems like I gained weight just by looking at food. But now that I had the knowledge and most importantly the discipline to make conscious healthy choices, my whole life has changed.
Obesity, diabetes, and heart disease cause millions of deaths each year. Every 45 seconds, someone in America suffers from a stroke. Join the battle against these controllable and preventable diseases. Listen to Healthy Alternatives.
Create a healthy future today. We're giving away another copy of Soldiers in Revolt, GI Resistance During the Vietnam War. Be the 10th caller at 454-6660. That's 454-6660 to get a book, Soldiers in Revolt, GI Resistance During the Vietnam War, written by David Cordwright, our guest this hour.
Starting your day with information you can't get anywhere else. It's the award-winning wake-up call with Liz Brown.
Welcome back. Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. I'm Liz Brown. I am talking this morning to author David Cordwright. He is the author of Soldiers in Revolt, GI Resistance During the Vietnam War. David, let's talk about race. How did race play itself out in forms of resistance during the Vietnam War?
Well, there was widespread racial intolerance, racism in the military in those days. It's still there. And I say that recognizing, nonetheless, that overall the armed forces have done better than many other parts of American society in allowing African-Americans and other people of color to achieve some level of status. But nonetheless, the racism is there. And it was magnified in the crucible of this unpopular war that tore the military apart. And so often it was the African-American troops who were the first to see that this war was wrong. And who were
kind of like Iraq.
Yes, exactly. The ones who spoke out and who showed their opposition to the military, who were refusing orders or who were threatening their commanders because of racist behavior against the troops. So the African-American troops spoke out, became the most organized, and there were many instances where actual rebellions took place. In the military, as in civilian life, the large majority of prisoners are people of color, and so in many of the brigs and major prisons in the military, there was a high concentration of African-American troops, and there were several major rebellions in these prisons, military prisons, during the war. One of the most infamous was at the so-called Long Binh Jail. We called it LBJ in Vietnam, where there was a major rebellion in 68. At Travis Air Force Base in California in 1971, there was a major uprising where troops took over a corner of the base and held out against not only the military police but civilian police who came in from the surrounding communities. There was even a major racial uprising and rebellion on one of the aircraft carriers, the USS Kitty Hawk, in October of 1972. was out on combat station in the Gulf of Tonkin, bombing Vietnam round the clock. And in the middle of October of that year, a group of African-American troops held a little mini-protest. It broke out into an armed conflict, and there was a huge rebellion that took place on that ship. For a time, the ship was more or less out of control. It was unclear who was really in charge. The XO came over the intercom and said, well, the CO has been injured and is not available. I'm in charge. The Marine Guard was roaming through the different sections of the ship, armed, trying to put down the conflict. For several hours during that night, you had this image of an aircraft carrier that was literally out of control. It was so serious, Liz, that a few weeks later, a couple months later, actually, the House Armed Services Committee in the Congress held a special hearing on the, quote, disturbances on the USS Kitty Hawk. And anyone who's an interested scholar among our listeners would want to look into the archives. There was an official report produced by the House Armed Services Committee on the conflict on the USS Kitty Hawk in October of 1972.
Now, we have about 3 or 4 minutes left here, David. And do you see that type of resistance? Is there any evidence, or is there even any way to measure resistance like this going on during the Iraq War as we speak?
I haven't seen evidence of anything like these large-scale rebellions or the organized anti-war committees that we saw during the Vietnam era.
But we haven't been at it as long as we were at the time that these things
started. That's right. Remember, it really took off in the Vietnam era around 68 or 69, and by then we had full-scale heavy combat for 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
So, but we have seen lots of evidence of discontent, of opposition, of low morale. These indications of early email communications that came in 03 before the military cracked down and limited internet access. We've seen opposition organized among the families. There is an organization called Military Families Speak Out that has more than 2,000 families part of it, and it has been a strong voice in the anti-war movement.
We've seen
someone like Cindy Sheehan become a major figure in speaking out for the family members.
And her organization, Gold Star Families, as well.
Right.
And let me get to a caller or two really quickly here. Bob, you have a question for our guest, David Courtwright.
Oh, yes. I know it's real quick time. I'm glad to hear you on there. Do you remember, sir, I was in the Marine Corps. Do you remember hearing about, I was thinking about when you said about fragging. Do you remember about in the Marine Corps in Parris Island, at the time a platoon had like 78 people in it, was a drill instructor marched the whole platoon into the quicksand except for three of them refused? You remember hearing about that?
No, I didn't hear about that.
Yeah, and I thought about what you said. They just marched right in it, and they all perished except for three of them.
Wow.
Yeah, so, okay.
All right, thank you, Bob.
Okay.
And I hear so many stories like that, Liz. You know, people over the years, folks who were in the military, they call them or email and say, hey, did you hear about this story?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we saw this incident or some of us refused orders in this situation or whatever. So there's a huge story out there. And my book tries to tell the part of that story, but it really needs to be told more thoroughly and more completely documented.
And where can people get a copy of your book, David?
Soldiers in Revolt. It's published by Haymarket Books. And so if you go to the website, just try to find Haymarket Books. And you can buy a copy right there.
We had another author from from Haymarket on yesterday, Mr. Zirin, who wrote the book Say My Name.
Right.
All right. I want to thank you very much, David Courtwright, president of Fourth Freedom Forum and author of Soldiers in Revolt, GI Resistance to During the Vietnam War. You are more than welcome. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Listen, folks, Liz Brown, Wake Up Call. I'll be back in the next hour. It's the Justice for Reggie Hour. Jamala Rogers is going to be joining us. We're going to be talking about trends across the nation, trends of moratoriums on the death penalty. There's a trend here in Missouri. Who'd have thunk it? In Missouri, a trend for a moratorium? A bill by a Republican? Say it ain't so. It is. And you'll hear more about that when we get back.
Say that progress is being made. If you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. You pull it all the way out, that's not progress.
the progress is healing the wound that's below major.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air.
WGMU, Granite City, St. Louis. 920 on your AM dial.
The latest from ABC News. I'm Daria Alvinger. It's over, and thankfully no one was hurt. An armed gunman is under arrest. He'd hold himself in a bank in Exeter, California, after he tried to rob the place and failed. He took 8 hostages. 2 escaped on their own. Lieutenant Keith Douglas with the Tulare County Sheriff's Department.
We start up with 8 hostages, and then all of them been retrieved safely. We're just really blessed to have that.
The gunman negotiated to have a pack of cigarettes delivered to the bank. That's when authorities went in after him. A leader for the Hamas party, the militant group now holds a majority of the seats in the Palestinian government. The group says it will not work with Israel and that it will not end its armed resistance. And the White House says it's not pleased with that.
Even before the vote was in, President Bush declared he will not deal with Hamas. He says governments should be entities that keep the peace.
That's ABC's Ann Compton at the White House. The president also had some advice for Ford and GM. He tells the Wall Street Journal that they should not be looking for bailout plans from the White House. Instead, he says the company should be focusing on making cars that people will buy. The president has a news conference. We've just gotten word of it. It will begin in about an hour and 15 minutes from now, 10:15 a.m. Eastern time. Iraq's released 5 female prisoners today, but says the decision has nothing to do with the demands the kidnappers holding American journalist Jill Carroll.
In addition to these 5 women, 420 men, give or take, were also released today, part of what U.S. authorities are calling a normal review board procedure, basically going over the evidence and determining whether there was cause to hold these people.
ABC's David Wright in Baghdad. Teflon could soon slide into history. The government's urging DuPont and other companies to stop using the chemical, which is used to make the nonstick surface. It's over health concerns. Checking the money scope at abcnews.com. The Dow is down in early going. ABC News.
Welcome back to Inside DC. I am Kim Davis, and we're talking politics with James on his car phone.
Kim, I just missed a right turn back there. Now, can I take a right at this light?
Well, I have been accused of leaning to the right.
To easily get back on track when you miss a turn, you want to ask TomTom, not Kim.
Turn left.
TomTom Go is your portable, everyday GPS solution. Grab it and go. Just tap the screen, and a helpful voice guides you where you're going.
You have reached your destination.
TomTom Go. Find your way the easy way. Learn more at TomTom.com.
Have you ever thought you'd like to buy and sell houses but didn't know how or where to get the money? Are you ready for a real home-based business that can get you out of the rat race and into financial freedom? Hi, this is Dolph DeRoos. I have engineered a proven system to real estate buying that will show you how to buy money-generating properties so you'll never have to work again. I'll send you a free tape that explains how easy it is.
Call 1-800-300-0464. 1-800-300-0464. 1-800-300-0464.
A large bank is saying no way to developers who want loans and plan to build on property acquired through eminent domain. Here's ABC's Daniela Bellotto.
Calling it plain wrong, BB&T Corp., one of the nation's largest financial institutions, says it will not loan money to developers who plan to build commercial projects on property taken from private citizens by the government through the power of eminent domain. The bank's chairman says it only expects to lose a tiny amount of business. The Supreme Court recently ruled that cities may raise people's homes to make way for shopping malls or other private development. BB&T says 38 states have recently passed or are considering laws to ban the use of eminent domain. Similar legislation is pending before Congress. Daniela Bellotta, ABC News.
A prison inmate's been recaptured after an escape attempt in Maryland. Police say the inmate who'd been hospitalized grabbed a corrections officer's gun and shot him, and then ran from the hospital and carjacked a taxi. The car crashed 5 miles from there. The inmate fled on foot but was caught. I'm Daria Alvinger, ABC News.
Good morning, St. Louis. This is Hanford Brandmeier with your WGNU news update for the 8 o'clock hour. In the news this Thursday, a St. Louis cab driver will not face charges in the shooting death of a teenager. The taxi driver had been taken into custody yesterday after the shooting of 16-year-old Corey Blanks Jr. in North St. Louis. Police say Blanks, a Roosevelt High School student, allegedly tried to rob the cab driver at gunpoint, and the driver shot him in self-defense. Ameren UE is beginning its cleanup of the Black River in the wake of December's Tomsoc Reservoir failure. The company says it is using chemicals commonly used to treat drinking water in order to remove suspended clay from the lower reservoir at the Tomsoc Hydroelectric Plant. The move is an effort to keep more sediment from getting into the Black River. The break of the plant's upper reservoir on December 14th sent more than 1 billion gallons of water down the river, causing flooding in Johnson Shut-In State Park and leaving 3 children seriously injured. If a new bill is approved in the Missouri legislature, local repair shops will once again be doing emissions testing. Roy Brooks, a mechanic at Bill's Automotive in Valley Park, says the repair shop lost money the first time they had to buy the emissions equipment.
I don't know what they spent on the first machine. I know it was in the thousands, you know, not teens. You know, they lose money on that, then they hand it back over to us, then we have to shell out money again, which I think is wrong. You know, if the state was going to take this over and want us to do it, I think they should supply the machines.
Brooks says it would take forever to recoup the money spent on the machine through emissions testing. The legislation, co-sponsored by State Senators Bill Alter and John Griesheimer, would decentralize the current emissions testing program in the St. Louis area and allow repair shops to instead do the testing. Finally this hour, 4,000 St. Louis area students are expected to participate in the 9th annual Groundhog Job Shadow Day. This nationwide event organized by Junior Achievement allows high school students to shadow mentors in the workplace. A recent nationwide survey showed that teens' top 3 careers of choice are business person, teacher, and doctor. The program will kick off on February 2nd and run throughout the year. This WGNU News Report is brought to you by HeatUpSt.Louis.org. Heat Up St. Louis wants you to remember that many disabled and elderly people may be facing utility shutoffs. The choice between eating and heating may be difficult. Please make a donation at HeatUpSt.Louis.org. That's your look at local news for the 8 o'clock hour. I'm Patrick Bryant-Meyer for Radio Free St. Louis.
Good morning, St. Louis. 7 minutes after the hour of 8 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by Account Temps. Eastbound 70 at Lucas and Hunter is an accident cleared to the shoulder. Traffic jams at Bermuda. Northbound 270 at 70. Look for an accident reported there. Westbound 44 between Washington and 50. Look for the left lane closed as they're doing some construction work out there. Eastbound 44 between Lewis and Meraz. Normal traffic there. Eastbound 40 from 141 all the way to Mason Road. Look for slow traffic. Eastbound 70 from Cave Springs, Third City Expressway. Looks good. Northbound 270 at Gravois and 44. Look for stop and go traffic. Eastbound 70 from T.R. Hughes to 79. Look for heavy volume going on there. Eastbound 40 between Ballas and Lindbergh. Slow traffic. Eastbound 40 between McKnight and Brentwood. Look for slow traffic as well. Westbound 40 from McCausland all the way into Hanley. Look for stop and go traffic. Westbound 5570 from Exchange to stop and look for stop and go traffic all the way into the Poplar Street Bridge. Westbound 64 Bow Avenue and 5570 look for slow traffic Martin Luther King Bridge at before Laclede's Landing. It is very heavy this hour going westbound and northbound Route 3 from Monsanto onto the Poplar Street Bridge. Look for slow traffic there. Merrimack at South Compton, look for an accident. And that is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by Account Temps, the industry leader in financial and accounting temporary staffing. Call or visit us today at accounttemps.com. Now taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and Saturday. Mostly sunny today. High in the mid-50s this evening, not quite as cool. Partly cloudy with a low in the upper 30s. Friday, mostly cloudy. Once again, high in the upper 50s. Friday evening, mostly cloudy with a 40% chance of showers. Low in the lower 40s. And on Saturday, showers likely with a high in the lower 50s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 29 degrees. Lambert Field is reporting 30 under sunny skies. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning Wake Up Call. That's up next. We'll take another look at your traffic and weather in the bottom of the 8 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. I think I'm here.
to you. You were born with power.
Very sad news for all of you, the people who love peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis. I will never say that progress is being made. If you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. If you pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below me.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Will the brothers stop
resisting? But the hard truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever. More families in trouble. More and more people who need help but can't find it. Struggle against the common enemies of man. Tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
We believe that all men are created equal. Yet many are denied equal dignity.
And so we say to all in this nation who dare listen to us, black, white, Jew, Gentile, Asian, Latino, and we are brothers and sisters in a long and...
Welcome back to the Wake Up Call, and it's Thursday, it's 8 o'clock, and it's Justice for Reggie Thursday. I'm here, of course, with Jamala. Jamala Rogers, good morning.
Good morning, Liz.
How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good, and good morning to the listening audience.
Very good. Jamala, let's begin where we always begin. Why are we here? What is the show about?
We're here to support the justice process for Reggie Clemens. And Reggie is a part of the Chain of Rocks murder case. And just to update listeners who may be hearing about the case for the first time, this is a case that in 1991, a group of three black young men and one white teenager went to the Chain of Rocks Bridge. This is a noted hangout for kids. The bridge had been closed for some time, so young people just really kind of hang out there. At that same evening, Tom Cummings and Robin and Julie Carey, both all three white, also were on the bridge. And before the night was over, the two sisters ended up in the muddy Mississippi River, and one body has never been retrieved. Tom Cummings, the cousin of the two girls, initially confessed to the crime, took a lie detector test, and failed. But somehow, during the course of an investigation, a flashlight was found on the bridge. And that flashlight was connected to Antonio Richardson, one of the teenagers. And it actually was not his flashlight. It was the flashlight of a friend's father who was in law enforcement. And so in a relatively short amount of time, the burden of guilt shifted from Tom Cummings to the three young black men.
And when you say that he failed a lie detector test, it was a lie detector test asking him if he was innocent of the charge.
Well, it was a series of questions,
right.
And it came back as deceptive.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was actually arrested for the crime.
As he should have been.
And so he alleged that, you know, he was forced to jump into 80 feet into the icy Mississippi and somehow survive without even...
his hair being messed up.
His hair being dry, no injuries after a plunge like that. And so, you know, automatically the story did not jive, and the detectives, as they needed to be, were suspicious of the account. So here we are, you know, in 2006, we already have had one execution of one of the co-defendants, and that is Marlon Gray. In the case of Antonio Richardson, he was exempted from the death penalty at a certain point because he is mentally challenged. The other interesting note is that the only white teen that was with them that night turn state's evidence against them. So
and
Daniel Winfrey, he got some time, and allegedly he may be out either this year or next year. So I'm going to find out exactly when that's supposed to happen. But, you know, he was able to get a lesser sentence for.
Well, not only get a lesser sentence, he's been allowed to live. And he also is a sentence that, because a lesser sentence than the death penalty is life without, this young man will be walking the streets.
He will be walking the streets.
He will.
Very soon.
He will. And if you believe that two young girls were murdered, why is he walking the streets and everybody else is, well, two of the people are set to be executed.
And the other interesting note in this case is that the two people who were sentenced to be executed were never convicted of rape, nor the actual murder.
They were never charged with
rape. They were never charged with rape, but they were convicted as accomplices. So when you have an accomplice, that means that there is somebody that you know who did the murder,
mm-hmm.
and there's no physical evidence, no anything that links neither Marlon nor Reggie to that kind of a crime. So, you know, all of the things that came together in this case, ineffective counsel, the whole racism of the judicial system, the prosecution of Nels Moss in its most egregious forms. So all of these came together to bear on the families of the black youth in the Chain of Rocks murder.
And if we could run down, just for people that are unfamiliar with the case, when you talk about ineffective assistance of counsel, that phrase really to me is just not big enough to really describe that your lawyer screwed you. Your lawyer did a horrible job. You were not defended at trial. You were not represented at trial. This was a case, a horrible case of someone paying for an attorney and their attorney not representing them. And now they're on death row.
And subsequently, that attorney, one of the attorneys, has been disbarred.
That's
so,
correct.
I mean, this is indicative of a number of death row cases across the country. Even in the case of Illinois, when there was the moratorium, there were about 33 cases mm-hmm. where the attorneys had been disbarred or suspended. So this is not a new or isolated phenomenon. You know, this is a regular.
And the most chilling ineffective assistance of counsel, one of the worst things that this attorney did was he stopped objecting. And he said he stopped objecting because the judge was just going to overrule him anyway. As a former defense attorney, that's mind-boggling. That's breathtaking.
It's breathtaking, but it also raises questions for people who don't understand the process to say, well, why can't we raise this now? Why come you all didn't do this? It's because the gate has been closed.
Right.
And unfortunately, a lot of the things will never be able to be heard, and except that there's something new and different comes up now. And so we really are fighting an uphill battle. But I think with the support of folks who have come to the fore, the kind of energy that's around the case, that, you know, we will prevail.
So what is the Justice for Reggie campaign about?
The Justice for Reggie campaign is to do a couple of things. One is that, I mean, we have to put the brakes on the death machine for Reggie in particular as an individual. But we also have to use his case to talk about the need for a moratorium. And we'll get into that a little bit more. And then the more that I think about this case and I'm out there talking with people and listening to their responses, we also have to send a message to the white powers to be, both here in this city as well as in the governor's house and in, you know, attorney general, is that we are not going to sit around and stand for young people, particularly young black men, being snatched up and killed or incarcerated when there's absolutely no evidence or no particular no evidence linking them to a crime. And so we need to send a message that we will not let them use young black men to step up to get promoted. Because when you look at a lot of these cases, Liz, people are getting promoted. They are using the deaths of black men and the incarceration of black men to build their careers. And that ought to be unacceptable. We ought to be outraged about that.
And it's a very familiar thing. It is as old as this country. This country was built on crimes committed against African people. So it's no big stretch to see that 200 years later that careers are being built on crimes being committed against black people.
Absolutely. And particularly when it comes to the death penalty, we know that that is pretty much an extension of the lynching laws that existed. And when I was listening to the show about the interpreter, mm-hmm. it really came full circle when you have a system that has no interest in the facts or the truth. Somebody's got to pay, and whoever it is, so be it. And I think that's the kind of challenge that we have before us. It's about Reggie, but it's also about all the other cases of young men and young women who have proclaimed their innocence and who, if they were given a chance, could actually prove that they are. But the tools and the process are really not there to support that.
And when you think about it anyway, we live in a society that there aren't any shows like Hill Street Blues on anymore where you have a balance. The Hill Street Blues showed the balance between the prosecution and the defense. You heard the defense side of the story. The stories that we hear out today, the shows that do the best, I can't watch them because they're so prosecutorial oriented. It's all about everybody's a criminal and society is just on a tear to get all these criminals off the street, and nobody's telling the other side of that issue. So you have this energy out there in society because of that and other things that people automatically assume that people are guilty and that people should be in jail.
Exactly. And when Irene J. Smith substituted for you in one of the Reggie Thursdays, we had Kika Matas, an attorney that's been working on Reggie's case. And both of them reminded the audience that the role of the prosecutor's office is not to prosecute for real.
Well, it's not to get convictions. It's to find the truth.
Exactly.
It is not about convictions. It is about finding the truth.
And that really escapes the average person because you see the role as the prosecuting attorney to convict whoever it is that's on the opposite
side. At all costs.
Exactly.
At all costs. We're about getting a conviction. And I will give credit to Claire McCaskill. She said that when she ran her office at the prosecuting attorney's office that some prosecutor's office give awards to attorneys that get the most convictions. She said, we didn't even keep a count. In fact, I gave an award for people that found that somebody was charged that was not guilty mm-hmm. for it. Because that's the energy that you have to bring to the office so that you don't have you don't have innocent people on death row.
And you don't have this competition to see who can get the most people killed.
Did you? And I know you heard this story, and it breaks my heart. I can hardly say it. In Chicago. It was so foul, so racist, so competitive in the prosecutor's office for the number of convictions. They had this thing that they called nigger by the pound. Mm-hmm. They would bring in a person accused of the crime and they would have a contest. Whoever got the most weight.
Right.
Of a person that they got convicted of a crime won the contest.
Exactly.
And they called it nigger by the pound.
Mm-hmm.
And that to me is just quintessential evidence of how foul this system is. And if you have a system like that, of course innocent people are going to be swept up.
Absolutely.
Because they've dehumanized them. They've turned it into a contest.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And that's the part that you and I talked about in terms of using the Reggie Clemens and the Chain of Rocks Bridge case to really provide some lessons for people so that when they have to be confronted with the justice system, then they understand the pitfalls that are automatically there. It reminds me many years ago when I was in a car accident, and we went to an attorney to do the damage stuff, and he said, do not talk to your insurance company because they are now an adversary. And I was looking puzzled because, first of all, the person who was my agent was the friend.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, you think you got this personal relationship
mm-hmm.
and they're going to take care of you. They're going to advocate
That's
for
right.
you.
Uh-huh.
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
So you're going into a hostile environment.
That's
you
right.
need to know that. You
That's
need
exactly
to not
right.
be naive about what this system represents.
That's
I don't
exactly.
care what kind of money you
they
got.
They ain't your friend.
They are not your friend.
You're in a fight. Okay. You're in a fight. And you got to act like you're in a fight. And most people don't know that because there's so trusting, or they believe that the system will find out the truth. No, it's your job to prove that, you know?
Yeah. And you're pretty much in a fight by yourself, and that's why a lot of times attorneys will say, well, don't get connected with, you know, these community groups. You know, the more, you know, you get involved with that, the less your chances are of winning. We found it to be just the opposite. The more community support you have, the more you talk about your case, the more likely you are for the process to be transparent, even with your own attorney.
And think about it this way. Wealthy people have their own community. And because their community gets involved in their case, they get advantages that other people have. You need a community, too. Everybody needs a community to help them, protect them, to save them from a system that everybody knows is not. Everybody really thinks about it and really investigates it and knows it's not fair.
And, you know, there's so many inconsistencies as it relates to race in this case. And just one thing that you said that made me think about it. For example, Tom Cummins, when he was arrested the night of the Chain of Rocks Bridge murder case, his father was called immediately, and he came to the bridge as they took Tom back to the bridge to talk about what had happened. His father was right there with him. His father was also at the police station when they were interrogating him.
And was there when the lie detector test was given.
Contrast that with when they came to pick up Reggie. Reggie's mother asked, do I need an attorney? They said, oh, no, he's not a suspect. We just want to ask him some questions. Well, she never saw her son again. The same thing happened when they took Antonio Richardson to the bridge to, quote, tell them what happened. He had nobody there. So you see, you know, you go in there just totally naked and vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever they're telling you or doing, you don't even understand how you're being used.
It's like, you can't go in, you can't go to France and go into a French home where they speak only French and expect that your needs are going to be met. These people are speaking another language that you don't know. You think you know English, but you don't know what they're saying when you're there because you got to factor in the stress part of it. You know how you can't listen, you can't focus, you can't get on top of things when you're under stress.
Right.
So that you've got that going on, and plus they're speaking in a language that you've never heard before and you don't know what they're saying.
Mm-hmm. Although you're saying yes, you understand because you don't want to appear to be stupid.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't understand, and you getting ready to go for a ride.
Yes, you are. And you're not coming back.
And you're not coming back. And too many of our young people and families that are involved don't come back.
And I want to throw this in here, too, because it's something that I promised myself I would say every time that we did do this show, Jamala. Do not get off jury duty. People need to, you need to, one of the ways that you make certain that you get justice is if you have people on there that understand the world the way that you do, that see the truth in the world, that people do lie, that cops do lie, that prosecutors will lie, that people won't always be honest. You need people with that kind of world life experience sitting on juries, and too many people, too many black folks say, you know, I don't want to be in a position of judging anybody. What do you mean? The world is judging you all of the time. You need to be on that jury to make sure that people are not judged wrongly.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I know we'll have a show in the future about jury selection and the impact that it has on these kinds of cases. But you're absolutely right. And like I said, when you're going into a hostile environment, you need all the allies that you can get.
Absolutely.
And in fact, the Constitution is supposed to guarantee you, you know, a jury of your peers and that kind of a thing. And if we all...
And an impartial jury.
And an impartial jury.
Mm-hmm.
And very... rarely do our folks get a jury of their peers.
And we have a couple more minutes before our break. Tell people how they can get involved in Justice for Reggie.
Well, two things, and this one of them is a change from what we've been doing. There are campaign meetings every second and fourth Monday. And so that way people can come in, get an update, get assignments for what's going on that week. But now, because the petitions are so important, we are going to be there every Monday. Every Monday from 7 to 9, people can come by, drop off petitions, and pick up petitions. And this will be at the Rowan Community Center, 1401 Rowan. And so people have a chance to participate right now in the petitions. We need to establish a date at the end of every month. That's going to be our deadline because people said, I need a deadline in order for me to make this an urgency in my life. So every month at the end of the month, that's the deadline for that month, and we'll collect as many of the petitions as we can, fully completed please, fully completed, and then we'll start the next month off with another round of petition drives.
And the website address and the phone number.
The website address is www.justiceforreggie.com, and people can call us at 367-5959.
And we're going to take a break, folks. When we come back, we're going to talk about moratorium campaigns that are going on all over this country, the success of them, and also the moratorium campaign here in Missouri. Our guest in the next half an hour will be David Elliott with the National Coalition to Abolish the Death Penalty. I'm Liz Brown. You're listening to Justice for Reggie Thursday. I'm here with Jamala Rogers. We'll be back after this break. Stay with us.
When I'm with you, I am far away, and nothing is for real. When I'm with you, I am lost for words, I don't know what to say. My head's spinning like a...
Good morning, St. Louis. 30 minutes after the hour of 8 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by McDonald's Restaurants. Eastbound 70 between Bermuda and Jennings Stations. Heavy traffic due to an earlier accident. Eastbound 70 at McKelvey is an accident on the right shoulder. Traffic is backed up to 270. Eastbound 44 for Mantyre and Merrimack River Bridge. Look for normal traffic. Eastbound 70 for Mid River Small. The Blanchett Bridge looks good. Northbound 270 is slow on either side of 44. Westbound 270 at Chain of Rocks Bridge all the way into Newhalls Ferry. No problems to report there. Eastbound 40 from Spady to Brentwood. Look for stop-and-go traffic. Westbound 40 from Hampton to Hanley. Look for stop-and-go. And northbound 270 from Dorset all the way to 70. Look for slow traffic in the right lanes due to an accident that's on the shoulder of eastbound 70 at McKelvey. Southbound 170 at Brentwood and 40, look for slow traffic in the right lane as you approach those on-ramps to 40. Westbound 5570 from Tudor on to the Poplar Street Bridge, you've got slow traffic. Westbound Kingbridge traffic at Laclede's Landing looks good. Merrimack at Compton, there's an accident. Northbound Route 94 at Prawley, there's an injury accident. Left turn lane is blocked. There's a short backup, and that is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by McDonald's Restaurants. Enjoy a little daylight savings at McDonald's. Stop in for one of three delicious breakfast extra value meals like Egg McMuffin, hash browns, and a small coffee, all for under $3. McDonald's, I'm loving it. Now, taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and Saturday, mostly sunny, high in the mid-50s today. Not quite as cool, partly cloudy with a low in the upper 30s for this evening. Friday, mostly cloudy, high in the upper 50s. Friday evening, mostly cloudy with a 40% chance of showers. The low should be in the lower 40s. And on Saturday, showers are likely to continue with a high in the lower 50s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 29 degrees. Lambert Field is reporting 31, both under clear skies. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning Wake Up Call. It's up next. We'll take another look at your news, traffic, and weather in the 9 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
Talk radio that discusses what matters most to you. It's coming to AM 920, Monday, January 30th.
Science or religion? Republican or Democrat? Politics, education, crime? Or you just want to talk about Girl Scout cookies? What's your opinion? What's your solution? Tell me, Dave Linehan, on Radio Free St. Louis, WGNU, Monday through Friday, 4 to 6. Try your best.
Here in this lush tropical rainforest, moisture is what keeps everything healthy and beautiful. Your lips need moisture to be healthy and beautiful, too. Chapstick Lip Moisturizer forms a light protective barrier to keep your lips' moisture in balance, so with every use, your lips look and feel healthier. Chapstick Lip Moisturizer. Keep your lips chapstick healthy. Use as directed.
He's back.
By popular demand and because it's so right on time, we're putting President Bush back on the couch. Yes, Dr. Justin Frank returns to the next edition of Mondays at 9 for another analysis of the chief executive. Is the domestic spying issue indicative of a controlling personality? Does the president completely depend on Dick Cheney, or is he merely a puppet deciding who pulls the strings? So many more issues have cropped up that we decided another session was in order. Don't miss Dr. Justin Frank, author of Bush on the Couch, our special guest on the next edition of Mondays at 9. Informative, educational, provocative. This is the award-winning Morning Wake-Up Call with Liz Brown.
Like a flower waiting to bloom, like a light bulb in a dark room, I'm just sitting here waiting for you to come on home. Turn me on.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is a Justice for Reggie Thursday. I am here with Jamala Rogers, and we are talking about Reggie Clemens' case. We're talking about the death penalty, and right now we're going to move on to part of the conversation, a discussion about moratoriums. And to facilitate that conversation, I have joining us from Washington, D.C., David Elliott. He's a communications director with the National Coalition to Abolish the Death Penalty. Dave, good morning.
Well, good morning, Liz. How are you?
I'm outstanding. How are you?
I'm doing just great, but it's freezing here in Washington.
You know what? It's like a heat wave here in St. Louis. So you want to have a discussion about global warming?
Oh, that's another program.
And I'm here with Jamala Rogers this morning.
Hey, Dave. How you doing?
Hey, Jamala. How are you?
Oh, pretty good.
And Dave, what we wanted to talk about this morning is this amazing and encouraging and exciting momentum that's going on across the country. Moratoriums are taking place.
Well, that's correct, Liz. In fact, within the past year, a total of 12 states, in addition to Missouri, have debated moratorium legislation. In some states, among them Alabama and Texas, moratorium bills have cleared committees. And in New Jersey, for the first time in modern history, a moratorium bill passed the state legislature with strong bipartisan support and was signed into law by the governor. So New Jersey now has a moratorium.
And tell us and before we go any further, tell us what a moratorium is.
Well, a moratorium simply says that we are not going to conduct any executions while a study of the death penalty is taking place. And once we start studying the death penalty, we study things like racial disparity and the cost to the taxpayers and the risk of innocent people being convicted and sent to death row. And so a moratorium is kind of like a politician's easy way out. They don't have to stand up and say, oh, I oppose the death penalty, but they do have to say, you know what? This isn't fair. This isn't right. We need to slow down, stop, and take a look at this.
And the interesting thing about a moratorium is that there's no time limit on it.
There's no time limit on it. In fact, years ago, outgoing Illinois Governor George Ryan declared a moratorium in his state. That was, I want to say, 2001, 2002. And that moratorium remains in place.
So what do you think these moratoriums mean, Dave? Should we take hope in this?
Oh, absolutely. Look, some states are going to have an up and down vote simply to abolish the death penalty. But a lot of other states, particularly in the South, we're going to see moratorium be the bridge to abolition. You know, it's just like you can't go from 0 miles per hour to 60 miles per hour in your car in 1 or 2 seconds. You know, you have to shift up and, you know, pick up speed as you go. Well, it's the same thing with moratorium and abolition. We're not going to wake up and have abolition tomorrow. It's going to take some incremental steps for us to get there.
So, New Jersey, what were the components that brought that all together, that made that come to a head?
Well, it started with the political situation in New Jersey, which is that they have spent some $250 million on the death penalty, and they've got something like 10 people on death row, and they haven't executed anyone. You know, the death penalty simply wasn't working. And so we recognized an opportunity, and we went in, we hired lobbyists, we put together a campaign, a very sophisticated campaign, dozens of volunteers engaged in weeks of phone banking into key legislative districts, and we ran it like you would if you were a candidate for political office running for statewide office. We ran a professional 21st century campaign, and the vote was pretty overwhelming. In the Senate, I think we won by a vote of 30-6.
Wow.
And in the House, it was something like, I want to say 55-25.
Wow.
55-12.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That's amazing. You must have just been ecstatic.
Well, it was a big victory. We expected it. Mm-hmm. You know, we're going to move on now to other states. I don't think that you'll see a huge number of successes in 2006, but I think that 2007 is going to be a huge breakthrough year for us.
Why do you think there won't be that many successes in 2006?
A couple of different reasons. First, a lot of state legislatures aren't even in session this year. For example, Texas doesn't come back into legislative session until January of 2007.
Huh?
So you always see more legislative reform in the odd number of years.
How do you go a year without having a session?
Well, they write their budget every 2 years, and it's called a biennial session. And the other factor to consider is that we have November elections.
Okay.
And, you know, let's imagine for a second that the Democrats did fairly well in the November elections at the national level. That would trickle down to an avalanche of new legislative seats at the state level.
I see.
And a lot of people who will be getting elected in November come from a bit of a younger generation. And for them, the death penalty is not what we call the third rail of American politics. Touch it and you get burned. There are going to be new people joining legislatures that are willing to take a look at the death penalty and vote their conscience and you know, look at the cost to taxpayers and the fairness issue and the innocence issue. So I do think that 2007 is going to be a huge breakthrough year.
And strategy-wise, are there any states that you're going to focus on in particular when you start back with the campaign to get more moratoriums across the country?
Oh, you know, I think that I think there's a half dozen to a dozen states that are in the mix. You know, certainly support is growing in Missouri. Missouri might not quite be at the tipping point yet, but it's moving in that direction. Certainly you have to look at New Mexico. You have to look at North Carolina, Connecticut. California's been debating this issue. So those are some of the states that are really ripe for legislative action.
And for people, if people want to involve themselves in this push for moratoriums, what do you advocate for people to do, Dave?
Well, I would encourage people to go to our website, which is at www.ncadp.org. Again, that's ncadp.org. And I'd urge them to look at our list of state affiliates, which is up on our website, and get in contact with their state affiliate and get involved. And if they can write two checks, if they can make two monetary contributions, I would make the first contribution to their state affiliate and their second contribution, if they can make a second one, to NCADP. The heavy lifting is always going to be at the state level, the local level. All we do is, you know, try to help coordinate it a little bit and, you know, try to teach some of the things we've learned so that all of our affiliates are going to be stronger and better prepared to take on this work.
Dave Elliott, Communications Director for the National Coalition to Abolish the Death Penalty. Thank you for joining us on the Wake Up Call.
Well, thank you for having me, Liz.
It's always a pleasure. And Jamala, one of the things we want to talk about when we come back is where we are in this state. I think that people are going to be surprised to find out. Well, actually, after listening to Dave, maybe not so surprising when you look at the a moratorium for what it is, that it's not, people don't have to come out and say, I oppose the death penalty. I don't think that anybody should be on death row.
Exactly.
But we're going to have we're going to have a nice mixture of folks that are involved in this.
And people need to get involved, and it starts first with knowing who your own state rep and state senator are. So it's another tool, not the only tool, but the legislative process is a tool in the struggle for, you know, justice around the death penalty.
And again, the number for Justice for Reggie and the website?
The number is area code 314-367-5959, and the website is www.justiceforreggie.org.
My name is Liz Brown. This is Justice for Reggie Thursday, and we're going to take a break. When we come back, Republicans and the death penalty in Missouri. Stay with us.
This global news report is brought to you by attorney Albert Walton, helping people get paid for over 25 years. This is your wake-up call global news update. Dateline Washington. The president is considering a measure that would allow individuals to get a tax deduction for more out-of-pocket expenses. Right now, medical expenses can only be itemized if they exceed 7.5% of your adjusted gross income. The administration feels that hiking that percentage will be one way to control rising health costs by putting more of the responsibility on the consumer. Other measures he's likely to include in the new budget will be to allow expansion of health savings accounts and to permit people to keep their insurance without extra cost if they take a different job or start their own business. One administration official made a comment during an interview this week that the current health system is backwards because business owners can get a tax deduction on the health insurance plans they provide for workers. But if workers have to buy their own insurance because the employer doesn't provide it, they get no tax break. And Dateline Washington. There's a new provision in the Patriot Act that will create a federal police force that will have so much authority it can forego the Bill of Rights to carry out investigations. This new force will be supervised by the Department of Homeland Security and will be able to arrest without a warrant for any crime against the U.S. committed in their presence or for any felony if they believe the person being arrested has committed or is committing the felony. There is also a provision in the law that authorizes further powers if an act designated as a special event of national significance takes place. Just what such an event would entail is not defined, but it would be declared by a protected person such as the president. If this is taken to the extreme, it could even prevent demonstrations from taking place anytime the president or vice president make a public appearance. This is another reason why the debate over the Supreme Court appointments is so crucial to civil liberty. This is your wake-up call global news update.
When you've been hurt in an accident, there are many things to consider. Doctor's bills, time lost from work, medical costs, ongoing injuries, pain and suffering. For over 25 years, attorney Albert Walton has helped people get paid for their property, paid for their pain and suffering, paid for their loss. Before you talk to anyone, call 314-388-3400. That's 388-3400 and talk to attorney Albert Walton for free. If you've been hurt, let attorney Albert Walton's knowledge and experience help you get paid. 314-388-3400.
It'll change everything you know about AM 920. It's coming to WGNU Monday, January 30th.
I know the place to shop for all your appliance needs. Sears, 3425 Union, Black-owned and Black-operated, Jerome Williams. Sears carries the top six appliance brands, Kenmore, Whirlpool, Maytag, GE, Amana, and Frigidaire. Sears also has the latest in electronics, TVs, VCRs, camcorders, and DVD players. Now, if you find a lower price on an identical branded item with the same features currently available at another local retail store, Sears will match that price plus give you 10% off the difference. That's the Sears Price Match Plus policy. So, save yourself a trip. Stop at Sears first and get a low price promise plus a great selection for your home and garden needs. It's all at your local Sears store right there at 3425 Union. Jerome Williams, 389-9700.
This is Dr. Laura Schlesinger. Join me every Monday through Friday from 2 to 4 on Radio Free St. Louis AM 920 WGNU and get a new attitude.
After the baby, I started working out and got a pain reliever for my knees. Went back to work, got something else for tension headaches. Baby got big, oh, I got one more for my back. Every new pain, a different pain reliever. But not anymore. Today, I'm all Advil. It's my every pain reliever. Advil works wherever I hurt, so I'm ready for anything. I'm all Advil. Are you all Advil?
Use as directed.
He's back.
By popular demand and because it's so right on time, we're putting President Bush back on the couch. Yes, Dr. Justin Frank returns to the next edition of Mondays at 9 for another analysis of the chief executive. Is the domestic spying issue indicative of a controlling personality? Does the president completely depend on Dick Cheney, or is he merely a puppet deciding who pulls the strings? So many more issues have cropped up that we decided another session was in order. Don't miss Dr. Justin Frank, author of Bush on the Couch, our special guest on the next edition of Mondays at 9. A voice for those that should be heard. This is the award-winning Wake-Up Call with Liz Brown.
The world still ain't seen nothing like my neighborhood. And of all of the fancy satin and silk, my white cotton feels so good. Search high and low for a place where I can lay my burdens down. Ain't nothing in the whole wide world like the peace that I have found.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to Justice for Reggie. This is Liz Brown. I'm here with Jamala Rogers. Jamala, welcome back. We're talking about moratoriums, and we've got one cooking, brewing, percolating up there in Jefferson City.
Yesterday, Representative Bill Deakin introduced Bill 1496 on a moratorium. And one of the things that Dave mentioned in the previous segment is the pattern of moratorium bills coming up. But this has been based on a lot of work on the ground to sort of swing people away from the whole death penalty. So it calls for public opinion changing and therefore the views of our state legislators changing, because after all they do respond to their constituents. So I want to make that point clear, because people do have the power to influence their legislators. And so as this bill starts to go through the process in the House, we're going to need people to go down for, they have hearings, we need to be involved in that. You need to be involved in making sure that your state legislator is on board with 1496. So there's a number of things even just around the moratorium that people can get involved in.
So write the number down. It's 1496. And what is interesting about this, it's introduced by a Republican. He's the sponsor of the bill.
He's the sponsor of the bill. And so to me, that suggests that, you know, we have been effective in letting people know that there have been innocent people that have been killed. And when you have a process that doesn't allow for innocence to prevail, the system is flawed. I mean, there's nothing you can do about that, because once you have made the mistake and somebody has been executed, there's no turning back. There's no, oops, okay, let's...
There's no do-overs.
There's no do-overs. And I don't think that, you know, I've heard sometimes folks will say about the death penalty is like, sure, there's some people who get executed wrongfully, but those are, you know, exceptions to the rule. And any time you have a process like this where many people are coming through the system, that's not that bad.
And it's, I guess they're saying that's a cost that the system can bear, and it's not.
It is. It's collateral damage in terms of what they, how they look at it. And if it's your family member, you certainly don't have that same view.
And also, how can any American be satisfied with a system that executes on a whoops, you know, and then keeps on stepping and says that that system still works? That we kill human beings wrongfully, and that's an acceptable That's acceptable.
And not only a whoops, but you don't even get an apology.
You don't get anything.
That's get remuneration.
That's right. Nothing.
That's true. Like you said, they just keep on stepping and going to the next case. And so I think we need to slow it down. And this is not the first time a moratorium bill has been introduced. We've been introducing them for the last several years. But the fact that a Republican is
in a Republican-controlled Senate and House and governorship, this is a big deal.
Yeah.
This is a big deal. And we were talking off air, Jamala. I am just amazed at this is a wonderful bill. It's amazing that it's the most inclusive bill that I've ever seen. In order to, they are going to establish a commission. This bill would establish a commission. Two members from the Senate, one from each party, a criminal defense attorney, a county prosecutor, a state public defender or their designee, an attorney general or his or her designee, a murder victim's family member, and a family of a member of an individual on death row. Representation on the commission shall be balanced with all the various viewpoints on the death penalty equally represented. That's amazing.
That's amazing, because I think too often one of the reasons people don't trust the system because it's appointed, just like the civilian oversight, if it's appointed, then you know that it's going to go in the direction of whoever was the appointee.
Mm-hmm.
And so in this case, it starts off saying we want a balanced view, and so we're going to ensure it by being in the language of the bill. And so
the commission will elect the chair from themselves.
Exactly.
So the chair is not even going to be appointed by anybody. These are the people that are going to sit down, work it out. And that's what democracy is supposed to be about. Work this out fairly. Let both sides, all sides, represent it fairly.
That's exactly correct. And in the process, they'll be looking at all the factors. They'll be reviewing cases, a history of cases of death penalty in Missouri, and looking at some of those contradictions. And I'm hoping that they'll come up with the same conclusion that Governor Ryan did. And people have to remember Governor Ryan was also a Republican,
mm-hmm.
who was a death penalty proponent. And when he started to hear about the cases of innocence, he brought his aides together to have them look at certain cases. And then, he would say, well, why didn't the appellate court catch this? Or why didn't this happen? Or why? And they couldn't answer the question. So he's like, I can't in good conscience.
This is not right.
It's not right.
It's just not right.
It's not right.
And the fabulous thing about this bill is that, and I want to read from the language of the bill, is that the commission shall review and analyze all cases in which the death penalty was sought and use a scientific method of random sampling to review and analyze a statistical representation of the cases in which first degree, second degree, voluntary manslaughters were filed on or after January 1st, 1977, they're going to learn some stuff.
They are going to learn some stuff. And I think the thing that's going to help them is that there has already been a number of studies by different people about the death penalty. There's even in Missouri, there's been books written about the death penalty and how it's been applied. So there's already a body of evidence that they have before them so that they don't have to, like, waste a lot of time and money starting new studies. But, a lot of that stuff is really already known to us.
And one of the other components of this bill, and again, it's House Bill 1496, they're also going to look at the cost of this, how much this costs the state of Missouri to kill people. There's a cost involved with that.
There's a big cost involved with it. And the solution to that is, well, let's cut down on the amount of time that people have to appeal.
That's not a solution.
That's not a solution.
Let's move faster so they can't catch us is not a
solution. Right. Or that we don't spend as much money. Let's give them a few years and then.
Ooh.
But what we know is that there's already been people wrongfully executed. We also know that there were a number of people who had reasonable doubt that we never got a chance to figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
And in the case of Illinois, when Governor Ryan,
mm-hmm.
Did his blanket, thing, there was one person, Anthony Porter, who was 2 days away from execution.
Mm.
2 days.
2 days.
48 hours.
Away from death.
Away from death.
And there are no do-overs. We have 2 minutes left here, Jamala. There's some announcements that we need to make.
Yeah, I want to announce that Damon Hollis Bay was the winner of the first round in the Poetry Slam, and the hip-hop folks in this community are organizing around Reggie's case, and they have what they call the Freedom Writers, and that's W. R-I-G-H-T-R-S, and Damon Hollis was the first round in the Poetry Slam. And so the next Poetry Slam will be this week, Friday, and we'll also have the first MC battle, and one will be at Ujamaa, the other one will be at Legacy. So go to the website, www.justiceforreggie, to find out, you know, which one is where.
And if they don't have access to the web, where can they call?
They can call 367-5959.
367-5959. And Jamala, any heads up?
Well, there's a number of things going on this weekend that people can check out. The Nation of Islam and Organization for Black Struggle both having their dinners. That's a good place. There's a couple of concerts that are out. And so we want people to take the opportunity to get those petitions out, get signatures, and talk about the case.
Jamala Rogers, thank you so much for joining me this Thursday, and we'll talk again next Thursday. I'll be back.
Thank you for having me.
I'll be back to talk to Mary Beth Cahill. She's a former campaign director for John Kerry to talk about ethics. We'll be back. Stay with us.
You pull it all the way out. That's not progress. The progress is healing the wound. That's below me.
I think I'm hearing revolution. The air filled with brothers.
WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis. 920 on your AM dial.
The latest from ABC News. I'm Daria Altinger. He has plenty to talk about, and President Bush takes reporters' questions in just a few minutes from now. ABC's Ann Compton at the White House with a preview of today's news conference.
At this surprise news conference, the president can quickly clarify U.S. policy in the Middle East. He has declared that he will not deal with Hamas so long as it advocates the destruction of Israel. This is an unusual event hastily arranged in the White House press briefing room because it comes just 5 days before the important State of the Union address and one day after the president's major defense of national security wiretaps.
The White House may not be thrilled with the results of the Palestinian election. Hamas won a majority of the seats. The group says it won't work with Israel and it will not end its armed occupation. But Amir Moussa, Secretary General of the Arab League, says what matters is what the Palestinian people want.
It's a democracy and the people have chosen whoever they want to choose.
Hamas has offered to form a coalition government, but the other party, Fatah, has refused. A spokesman for the Tulare County Sheriff's Department.
It's a great conclusion to a very long incident.
It was a long incident, a hostage situation, ended peacefully in Exeter. Police moved in on the gunman who was holed up at a Bank of America branch when he negotiated to have a package of cigarettes brought to him. At one point, he had 8 hostages with him. 5 were let go, 2 escaped. Another company may have put your identity at risk.
Welcome to this podcast by Ameriprise Financial.
On its website, Ameriprise highlights its retirement investment services for aging baby boomers.
78 million baby boomers reach age 60.
Now the account numbers of 158,000 Ameriprise customers may be compromised. The company says a laptop containing the data was stolen from an employee's car. The data also includes the social security numbers of 70,000 financial advisors. Ameriprise says the theft of the laptop appears to be a random criminal act. Jim Hickey, ABC News.
This is ABC News.
Welcome back to Inside D.C. I am Kim Davis, and we're talking politics with James on his car phone.
Kim, I just missed a right turn back there. Now, can I take a right at this light?
Well, I have been accused of leaning to the right.
To easily get back on track when you miss a turn, you want to ask TomTom, not Kim.
Turn left.
TomTom Go is your portable, everyday GPS solution. Grab it and go. Just tap the screen, and a helpful voice guides you where you're going.
You have reached your destination.
TomTom Go. Find your way the easy way. Learn more at TomTom.com.
Have you ever thought you'd like to buy and sell houses but didn't know how or where to get the money? Are you ready for a real home-based business that can get you out of the rat race and into financial freedom? Hi, this is Dolph DeRoos. I have engineered a proven system to real estate buying that will show you how to buy money-generating properties so you'll never have to work again. I'll send you a free tape that explains how easy it is.
Call 1-800-300-0464. 1-800-300-0464. 1-800-300-0464.
That set of Teflon pans you have may be worth a lot more soon because you might not be able to buy them. The government's working with DuPont and other companies to phase out the use of the chemical. That's a key component in the nonstick surface. So for possible health risks, but what if you have the cookware now?
DuPont says, and the government agrees, there's no need to throw out
Teflon pots and pans, but there are cautions, particularly about heating up the pan too high a temperature. It can cause a Teflon flu in humans. You get sick from it, and it kills canaries and parakeets. Mm-hmm. Domestic birds can be killed by the fumes. So be very careful about overheating the pan.
That's ABC News Chief Investigative Correspondent Brian Ross. So you say you have a platinum card, and maybe you're even lucky enough to have a black card. Well, if you want to be truly trendy, you need the red American Express card. Rockstar and activist Bono introduced it today. A portion of all the sales will go to charities that fight AIDS in Africa. I'm Daria Albinger, ABC News.
Good morning, St. Louis. This is Patrick Brandmeier with your WGNU news update for the 9 o'clock hour. In the news this Thursday, Ladue High School is taking precautions against the spread of staff infections after a student's illness. A member of the school's wrestling team is out of the hospital after coming down with a drug-resistant staph infection. School officials say the student's prognosis is good. The school's locker room, weight room, fitness center, and wrestling area have been sanitized. The CEO and executive director of the Missouri Higher Education Loan Authority is out of his job. The Mohella Board of Directors has fired Michael Cummins and replaced him with Raymond Bayer, effective immediately. The move comes amid controversy over the sale of Mohella's assets. State Democrats have accused Governor Matt Blunt of secretly negotiating a no-bid contract to sell the authority to Sallie Mae. Blunt has denied the allegations. Finally this hour, St. Louis Children's Hospital and Washington University School of Medicine are joining forces to find cures for some of the deadliest childhood diseases. Dr. Jonathan Gitlin, the director of genetics at the hospital, says the new Children's Discovery Institute will allow different medical professionals to work together to find cures for congenital heart disease and other diseases.
It's an extraordinary thing. It's a great thing for the children of St. Louis, and it's a great thing for the community of St. Louis.
In addition to heart disease, the center will also focus on finding cures for cancer, lung and respiratory disorders, and musculoskeletal disease. In order to support the $355 million endeavor, St. Louis Children's Hospital has launched a $125 million fundraising campaign. This WGNU News Report is brought to you by TomTom. TomTom Go is your portable, everyday GPS solution. Just tap the screen and a helpful voice guides you on your way. To learn more, visit TomTom.com. That's your look at local news for the 9 o'clock hour. I'm Patrick Brandmeier for Radio Free St. Louis.
Good morning, St. Louis. 6 minutes after the hour, 9 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by heatupstlouis.org. Northbound 270 onto the ramp to St. Charles Rock Road, a report of a ladder in the roadway. Use caution as you roll up to that area. Eastbound 270, 367, bridge maintenance operations have one lane closed. Southbound 270 between Sappington and Tesson Ferry, look for road maintenance operations, right lane closed. Eastbound 44 from Bowles to Guyer, expect normal traffic. Eastbound 70 from 79 to Blanchett Bridge, everything's running smoothly. Northbound 270 at 44 is returned back to normal. Westbound 270 at Bell Fountain and New Florissant, look for no problems there. Eastbound 40 between Brentwood and Hanley, look for everything be heavy this hour. Westbound 40 between Big Bend and Hanley, look for traffic to be easing. Northbound 55 between DePere and 44, look for everything to be on the move. Westbound Kingbridge traffic before Laclede's Landing looks good. South Sarah at Forest Park Avenue, there's a report of an injury accident. And that is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by HeatUpSt.Louis.org. Heat Up St. Louis wants you to remember that many disabled and elderly people are facing utility shutoffs. The choice between eating and heating may be a difficult one. Please make a donation at HeatUpSt.Louis.org. Now taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and Saturday. Mostly sunny today, high in the mid-50s. This evening, not quite as cool. Partly cloudy with a low in the upper 30s. Friday, mostly cloudy with a high in the upper 50s. Friday evening, mostly cloudy. A 40% chance of showers with a low in the lower 40s. And on Saturday, showers likely, a high in the lower 50s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 30 degrees. Lambert Field is reporting 32, both under sunny skies. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning wake-up call that's up next. We'll take another look at your news and your weather in the 10 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
I see I'm hearing revolution in the air.
Welcome back to the wake-up call. This is Liz Brown. My goodness gracious, George W. Bush is going to be holding a, he's actually going to be talking to the press. Really? Talking to the press 15 minutes after we get off the air this morning. He's going to have a 10:15 press conference to talk about Alito, to talk about it's my country and I can do whatever I want to. He's going to talk about that he should be able to spy on Americans. Shut up, sit down, and no more questions. He's also going to, but you know what word I don't think is going to come out of his mouth? You know what word I would bet the farm. I will bet the farm. Actually, it's 10:15, 5 minutes from now. Oh, we'll be able to assess it. That's Eastern Standard Time. All right now. Thank you, Howard. It's 5 minutes from now. But I bet you I know one word that's not going to come out of his mouth because it's kind of difficult to wrap his mouth around this word. I mean, we know that he trips and he stumbles. We know that. We know that he makes a mockery out of having a degree. We know that. We know the cheerleader has troubles. But I bet you, as stumbling and bumbling and as many words that fall out of his mouth that shouldn't fall out, the one word that won't is the word ethics and ethics reform. We need to talk about ethics reform. What's being done? Can we, should we, or in the words, although the take back words, I didn't know that there were any take backs in politics, but take back words of Harry Reid, it's like putting John Gotti in charge of crime control. We need to talk about ethics, and we need to talk about ethics reform. And our guest this morning to facilitate that conversation is Mary Beth Cahill. She is the former campaign director for John Kerry, and she's joining us in Washington, D.C. Mary Beth Cahill, good morning.
Good morning, Liz. It's a pleasure to be on the air in St. Louis.
It's wonderful to have you here. So,
well, thanks.
Ethics. You think that's going to be one of the words that comes out of George Bush's mouth during this in this press conference 5 minutes from now?
You know, the thing about the president, Liz, is that I think that he thinks that he's in a permanent campaign.
Mm.
He can keep stonewalling. And so he will not release the pictures, the five pictures that we know there are of him with Abramoff in the White House.
And Mary Beth, do you think it's fair to say that anybody that has five pictures of themselves with George Bush has had a meeting?
Well, I mean, one of them, allegedly, according to Time magazine, shows that he had a meeting with one of the chiefs of one of the Indian tribes, one of his clients, in the old executive office building. And it's been seen by a number of people, and the White House won't release it. I mean, I think the unfortunate thing here, Liz, is that the American Indian tribes are a casualty of this insider Republican scandal of corruption, because they legitimately want to have their interests represented. They picked the wrong guy, and they picked the wrong administration, because Abramoff was a tool of the Bush White House and a tool of the Republican Congress.
Well, I think it was reasonable to assume that you were going to have your interests met if you're sitting in the White
House.
The
executive office?
Yeah,
exactly.
With the guy that's sitting in the president's office.
Exactly.
I'm sure they thought they were hooked up.
They were.
They didn't know they were being hosed.
And that's exactly what happened to them. But the thing is, it's happened to us as a country, because under this administration, you know, the Medicare drug plan, which nobody can understand and has left our seniors not knowing where they're going to get their prescriptions, was written really by drug company lobbyists. Our national security policy is written by Halliburton, who gets a no-bid contract. This is not working for us.
And I think one of the interesting phenomena that's going on right now, Mary Beth, is that too many citizens, it seems like, want to view politics like a sporting event, that you have your team, I have my team, and that's just the way that it is. But the reality is that whether you are a Republican or a Democrat, you're supposed to, you don't come to Congress just to represent nothing but Republicans.
There's no question about that, Liz. And the thing is, campaigns are hard fought. I know that better than anybody does. But then when someone gets elected, they have to go to office and do the people's work, regardless of party. And George W. Bush makes, you know, every so often takes a swing toward bipartisanship, but then he just works for the vested interests, the big business, his Republican cronies. And that's true in the House, in the Senate, and in the White House right now. There's no interest in the public interest.
Well, Mary Beth, one of the things about it, if we are involved in a fight, we're not supposed to just stand here and take it, because then you become punch drunk and you're not able to do anything. The what is being said about the Democrats right now, and I think that it's fair in a lot of ways, is that they're not swinging back. They're just taking the punches.
Well, you know, I think when you watch the Alito hearings, I don't get that, Liz, because I think that Senator Kennedy in particular, mm-hmm. Senator Feinstein on Roe v. Wade and other civil liberties issues really tried to hold Alito's feet to the fire. The point is that right now we can't set the agenda in either the House or the Senate. There are no oversight hearings on any of these things, on Medicare, on security, on tax cuts. There's no oversight. There's no way to get the real answers, because the Republicans control the levers of power here. I know that we have to go back in 2006 and win enough House seats so that we can turn that around. And I think that we can, because of the enormous mistakes made by the Bush campaign and the Bush administration through its arrogance.
Well, Mary Beth, I'm a woman of African descent. I was a former public defender. I know that I was born, everything was put there in opposition for me to move forward. And I know that I've never been part of those that have been in power.
Right.
But what we did and what my community did was we protested, we organized, we made noise so that the world knew and the world saw the wrongs that were being committed against my community. The Democrats have that opportunity too, and I guess the thing that I'm feeling is that they're not making enough noise about all of the crap that is going on up there.
Well, you know, Liz, the one thing that I would say is that Howard Dean has never been accused of not making enough noise. And he has time after time pointed out what he thinks is going wrong with this administration. I think that we're about to have hearings because it's so egregious on this wiretapping and violation of our civil liberties that even Republicans are uncomfortable about it. And I think that that is going to be a real chance for the Democrats to shine. I also think that Harry Reid has made it clear at every step along the road that he puts the nation's interest first, but that he is going to let people know where the Democratic Party stands. And I think that, you know, we're paying more and more, we're hearing more and more about that.
Do you think they're going to say the F word, filibuster? Are we going to do that?
I don't know. I mean, watching the Judiciary Committee vote, obviously straight along party lines, 10-8.
And that was historic.
That was
very historic. But this guy is so wrong.
He's going to be so wrong for the country, and he is going to be.
So why not fall on your sword? Why not fall down and say, I'm not going to move on this one?
Well, I think that one of the things about being in the Senate, you know, for the most senior members of that committee is, you know what the vote count is, and you know that we're going to need 60 votes here, and they know that they haven't got it. Now, there are those members of the Senate, particularly Senator Kennedy, who feel like we ought to go for it anyway, mm-hmm. because this is a sword worth falling on. Mm-hmm. This is a sword
Absolutely.
Worth falling on for our civil
Absolutely.
Liberties.
Absolutely. And that's the job.
It is.
And particularly, again, as a black person, people come to my community during every election, every presidential election, and they say, okay, I know that this candidate may not be everything that you want them to be, but remember, they are going to be our protection on the Supreme Court.
Right.
The Supreme Court. Okay, now it's on. This is Alito lied. Okay, for a man to say, I don't remember what I did
exactly.
when I was 35, you are a liar. You're not to be trusted. You don't get a job promotion.
Well, the problem here, we have to win the next election, Liz, is the only thing that I can tell you. We need more Democrats. We have 45 in the Senate right now. We need enough people so that we can get the votes, get one or two Republicans, and turn back these terrible nominees. We just don't have the horses right now.
We don't have 40 people to say no? I thought the magic number was 40.
No, 60 for the filibuster. I mean, right now, I think that we would have 44 Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody except Ben Nelson from Nebraska, I think, is going to vote against him. And we're only going to lose one vote from a red state.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's not enough to turn this back.
That's not enough for a filibuster.
We're not going to win this. It's another big thing that he is going to win.
But I guess I want to be sitting out here in the Middlelands,
right
here in the Midwest. Even if my person that's on my side, even if they lose the battle, I take comfort in the fact that they fought the fight.
Right.
And shouldn't the Democrats be concerned about being seen as not as losers, not losers
right.
because they didn't even try to fight?
Well,
that's almost like a double loser.
No, I agree with you, Liz. I mean, you have to stand up for what you think is right, and that is absolutely critical here. But walking in and knowing that you're not going to win. That he is almost certainly going to win confirmation to the Supreme Court. The Republicans are crowing already that they have votes for this.
See, again, I'm black. I understand walking in and people saying that you're going to lose, but you got to fight the fight anyway.
Right. Well, and the Senate Democrats have filibustered those justices that they thought were by far the worst in through Priscilla Owen and, you know, a bunch of others. You know, they gave George W. Bush his, you know, a lot of his judges, but they refused to give the most egregious ones.
But see, I think, aren't they just simply more egregious simply because they've said more? This guy is just as egregious. He just has kept his mouth closed.
Yeah, no question. And he went through this whole hearing without ever answering a question or remembering a thing from all of his principles through a life in the law, which is, you know, it's a straight-out lie.
How do Democrats win? How do Democrats win in an atmosphere like that? What inspires America besides a concern about George Bush? Because I think that atmosphere is out there. I think that there is fear and loathing out there of George Bush. But is that is that the type of energy that the Democrats should even want? Shouldn't they want an energy of fear and loathing of George Bush, but also a desire to connect with a party that's going to not be like that?
No, I think that we have to offer a positive vision for the future. And that has to do with making us safer. And making us safer has a lot to do with what happens here at home. After all of the money that the Bush administration has spent, our ports aren't any safer, our transportation isn't any safer, and, you know, people just don't feel like our homeland is defended to the degree that it ought to be. We're not getting the quality education for our children that we ought to get, and healthcare is becoming more and more difficult for people with jobs, never mind those people who don't have employment at the current moment. So I think that it's keeping us safer and having a positive vision for the country.
And have we had that vision articulated? Is it people like Contract for America? They like things that are repeated and clearly stated and all of that. Do we have that? I mean, I hear the phrase culture of corruption. I dig that. I hear that. That's cool. But what's the plan? And where is it?
Well, you know, I think last week, Liz, I saw, and I'm sure you saw, that Nancy Pelosi in the House and Harry Reid in the Senate came together with a declaration of honest leadership, which is lobby reform and a forward-looking program for the Democratic Party to lead the country for all of our people. I think we're going to hear a lot more about that as we get closer to the election, because right now there is so much focus on Abramoff, on Congressman Ney, on Tom DeLay, on everything that has gone wrong in the House. And I hope we're going to have oversight hearings on all of the above. But then we'll get on to what the Democrats want to do and how they want to run the 2006 elections.
But Mary Beth, I just want to pull my hair out. I mean,
yeah.
The Democrats, their announcement was a day after the Republicans got out on front, and they're the ones that got all the news for the ethics reform.
But their ethics...
I agree. I know that their ethics reform sucks. But they still got the press. The Democrats came out a day after. Why weren't they first?
Yeah, no. I have no answer for that one, Liz. Your point is well taken.
Because, I mean, let's go through this laughable plan that the Republicans put out. They said, well, tell us what the plan was.
They are actually not addressing the real problems here, which is there is a lobbying culture in Washington. Now, I just say that it says in the Constitution, as you know and I know, that the people have a right to appeal to the Congress. And, you know, lobbyists actually aid that. And a lot of people, like the Alliance for Justice or the NAACP or you know, Planned Parenthood, use that, from my point of view, to the nation's good, the National League of Cities. But with this Republican Congress, it really is business and special favors that have taken over the Congress. You know, I think that their lobbying reform does not address the fact that, you know, earmarking is one of the most egregious things that happens. What that is a favor from one member of Congress to another for his or her district, something that's just tacked on to another bill. until that goes away, I think that we are going to have this kind of backroom dealing, which is not for the people all across the country. I think also that insulating members from the kinds of gifts that are offered and the opportunity for double dealing is, you know, absolutely necessary. But more than that, I think that we have to have a real comity and an ability for people on both sides of the aisle to try to do the nation's business. We need a change in the culture here in Washington, D.C.
Do you think there's a danger, Mary Beth, because you have been a campaign director. You know how ideas need to be formulated and formed and strategized and put together. Do you think that there is a danger for the Democrats to have to use this, to use the word ethics reform as part of the discussion, as opposed to, you know what, we need to throw them all, throw all of those guys out, every single one of them, because the way that they got corruption is at the heart of the way that they govern. And that's it. We're not going to let them reform ethics. We're not going to let them reform welfare. We're not going to let them reform anything because they're incapable of it, because corruption is at the heart of the way that they govern.
You know, that, from where I sit, is more than true, Liz. And watching, you know, there's all of the Republican National Committee is trying to make this corruption touch both sides. It just doesn't. Abramoff did not give a single contribution to one single Democrat.
But see, I think that that pulls you into a discussion, Mary Beth, of people of saying that it's not us, it's them on this ethics thing. But when you make it into the larger issue that it is about, they're corrupt in everything that they do, so why wouldn't they be corrupt in this one too? You understand what I'm saying?
I do. But watching this and watching the way that Washington, you know, that it works. I mean, Abramoff is really the symbol of everything that went wrong.
And I got to hold that thought. We have to take a break.
Okay.
I'm talking to Mary Beth Cahill. She's the former campaign director for John Kerry, and she's joining us from Washington, D.C. I'm Liz Brown. This is the Wake Up Call. Don't forget, we are archived daily at WhiteRoseSociety.org, LizBrown.com. So if you missed an hour, shame on you, but you can go get it at WhiteRoseSociety.org. I'm Liz Brown. Stay with us.
The St. Louis Art Museum in Forest Park is hosting a performance by classically trained jazz pianist Peta Williams, who has been voted the best jazz musician in St. Louis 5 times by the readers of the Riverfront Times. The event will be held this Friday in the Grigg Gallery from 6 to 8:30 p.m., and best of all, admission is free. For more information, call 314-721-0072. A musical note from WGNU Radio.
This is Mitch Washington of the St. Louis office of Edward Jones, located at 200 North Broadway downtown, inviting you to tune in to Radio Free St. Louis for the WGNU Stock Market Recap, weekday afternoons immediately following the 3:30 traffic update. Find out how your investments are doing and how the numbers on Wall Street are affecting you. That's the WGNU Stock Market Recap with me, Mitch Washington, weekday afternoons at 3:30 on Radio Free St. Louis, AM 920 WGNU.
It's the biggest change at WGNU in 30 years, and it's coming Monday, January 30th.
Listen to the Angels Watching broadcast, heard here on WGNU 920 AM each Saturday, time 4:30 PM, and each Sunday morning at 11 AM. Be blessed. Listen to Brother Steve Moore, Mr. Celebrity himself, on WGNU 920 each Saturday at 4:30 and each Sunday morning at 11 AM. Don't miss it.
Go on, knowing everything's going to be all right.
He's back.
By popular demand and because it's so right on time, we're putting President Bush back on the couch. Yes, Dr. Justin Frank returns to the next edition of Mondays at 9 for another analysis of the chief executive. Is the domestic spying issue indicative of a controlling personality? Does the president completely depend on Dick Cheney, or is he merely a puppet deciding who pulls the strings? So many more issues have cropped up that we decided another session was in order. Don't miss Dr. Justin Frank, Frank, author of Bush on the Couch, our special guest on the next edition of Mondays at 9. The Struggle for Fairness on the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown. I'm talking to Mary Beth Cahill. She's the former campaign director for John Kerry, and she's joining us from Washington, D.C., and we're talking about ethics reform. Mary Beth, welcome back.
Thank you.
When we talk about ethics reform and the Republican Party's attempt to address this, you talked about Abramoff being the heart, the head, the mind, the body of this entire issue. Talk to us about that.
Well, you know, the thing is, over the course of this administration, of the 5 years of this administration, they have decided that they want to institutionalize their control of the government. And so the Tom DeLay set up something called the K Street Project, which is, K Street is where most of the lobbyists have their offices in Washington. And what they are trying to do is to make sure that no job, no association, no office is ever headed by a Democrat, that they give complete control of these organizations to the Republicans. He's an outgrowth of that. Jack Abramoff raised over $100,000 for George W. Bush. He had his picture taken with him in the White House 5 times. He gave hundreds of thousands of dollars to Republican office holders. And he, and obviously, he greatly enriched himself in that process, getting kickbacks from, you know, other people that he had put into jobs. He is really the living embodiment of everything that has gone wrong here. Now, the Democrats in no way enter into this at all.
And what's interesting is when the Republicans feel pressure to respond to the Abramoff issue, respond to the culture of corruption, they put in charge their point man, Rick Santorum.
Exactly.
And tell us why this is a huge joke.
Because he was one of the people who, he was a godfather of the K Street Project. He used to meet with them. They have a meeting every Wednesday downtown. The lobbyists themselves, Republicans on the Hill, Republican staff members, to get together, they would go over a job list every Wednesday to make sure that Republicans got every job of any note here in Washington, D.C. And now they turn to him as the lead in trying to clean this mess up. If there was ever, you know, a fox in the hen house situation, it's this one.
So in terms of how this... You were the former campaign director for John Kerry. How is this landing in the red and blue states out here? Are people getting it? And what are Democrats doing? And what are some of the things that are going on to get Americans to get the culture of corruption that's in Washington right now?
You know, I think just the fact that the Speaker Hastert is trying to figure out what his leadership team is going to look like in the House, because obviously Tom DeLay is out of the leadership now. Bob Ney from Ohio has had to step down from the powerful House Administration Committee chairmanship because he accepted golfing trips to Scotland. He accepted fancy dinners. His staff people have gone to work for Abramoff. I mean, it is so clear that this is an enormous problem. The other thing is, in the Senate, Senator Frist from Tennessee, the Republican's leader, has broken the ethics laws in, you know, he owns a lot of stock in a healthcare company in Tennessee, and, you know, he traded that stock just before the company was about to be sold. In time after time, they've seen the ethics rules. There are a lot of ethics rules already, Liz, and they've broken every single one of them. They're going to be held to account, I think, in hearings here in Washington, D.C., but more than that, in the press and in the campaign as we go to 2006.
Whose press?
And actually, you know, I have to say, I think that on this story, the newspapers have done a pretty good job, Liz, day after day.
But here's the thing, and one of the reasons why, and I know that you know this, but one of the reasons why the Republicans have been so successfully entrenched is because they have cranked on machinery outside.
I agree with you completely.
So what's the machinery we're cranking on, the Democrats are cranking on, in order to bring this to a head, to make certain that every American knows the name of Abramoff, to make certain that every American knows the name of Tom DeLay? What's the campaign? Bush is on a campaign right now to convince Americans that I can spy on you.
Spying is okay.
If I want to, damn it. I can spy on you.
Exactly.
So what's the campaign?
Well, you know, part of the campaign is people, talk show hosts like you, who give a voice to the loyal opposition here. And, you know, week after week, there are people like, you know, the Wake Up Call, shows like the Wake Up Call, that give an alternative view to this. We do have now finally our own radio, but Fox News was built up. It wasn't built up overnight, Liz, as we both know.
Mm-hmm.
And now, you know, it is extraordinarily popular and extraordinarily partisan. We have to come up with the same sort of thing. Air America, I think, on the radio is one thing, but, you know, smart and fair-minded radio stations across the country play an extraordinary role in this.
So Liz Brown can't do this by herself. So,
no, I know she can't, but she's doing a very good job.
So, you know, I mean, I guess the thing, Mary Beth, is we need the plan. Because,
yeah.
Because as they say in golf, the Republicans are teed up.
Yeah,
I mean,
they are.
You know, so it's up
well,
to...
Well, Carl Rove told us last week exactly what they're going to do. They're going to say that one more time that Americans are not safe, that they can only be kept safe by George Bush, and you should let him do anything he wants to. And right now he's in front of the press and in front of the nation in a press conference saying why he needs to spy on us.
But here's the other piece. I am so frustrated to hear the conversation be reduced into Republicans saying Democrats are soft on crime, and the Democrats, instead of saying the Republicans are corrupt, they come back with, I am not soft on crime, I am not soft on, you know what, I mean, I'm not soft on terrorism, I'm not soft on terrorism, instead of, there are lawyers out there that do this for a living that know how to articulate the fight. The fight isn't that the Democrats are soft on terrorism. The fight is the Republicans are corrupt.
Well, you know, the thing is, I think Americans do want to know that they're going to be kept safe, Liz. And I think that they, you know, they know that our ports aren't any safer, our trains aren't any safer, and, you know, it's still possible for people who want to do us harm to get into this country. And that we have to lay out a better plan to take care of our nation's security. And, you know, use the money better. Don't just give it away to Halliburton. Just don't give it away in no-bid contracts. That we're going to make sure by every step professionally that we'll keep the country safer. But also that we will have a plan for the future for making life better for all Americans. I think that's what this campaign is going to be fought out on. And, you know, this time around, we're going to win.
But you see the trap that can be laid for you.
I know it all so well.
And I'm seeing Democrats fall back into it when I hear them say, when I hear on other radio stations, when I hear on the news that the Democrat response is, we are tough on terrorists too, as opposed to, you're not any safe. You are not safe under the Republicans because of their culture of corruption.
Right. And I think that definitely has to be sharpened as we go through the election. And I think that we're going to see that. And I think people increasingly believe it because people know the facts of their daily lives. And so I think that message will be sharpened as we go to the elections in November.
But the issue has to be people get it, but are they going to be inspired to be part of the political process to change what's going on?
Well, I certainly hope so. And you're talking to someone, Liz, who is sitting here with all of her fingers crossed.
Okay. 454-0400 is my phone number, 1-877-920-WGNU. If you have a question, if you have a comment, get to me. Christine, you have a question for Mary Beth Cahill.
Yes, Mary Beth. This is, I must say, it's hearsay, so maybe you can clarify it. I had heard that
Dianne Feinstein was almost apologetic to Samuel Alito because of the questions that she had asked him about this racist organization that he belonged to. I believe it was at Yale. And her information was from a satire on this racist organization. So could you clarify that for us?
Thank you, Christine.
You know, I think Senator Feinstein actually was one of the toughest questioners of Samuel Alito when he came in front of the committee. And the Concerned Alumni of Princeton, which was this group, which he joined after he graduated, which tried to keep Princeton all male and all white, was something that he deserved every question he got about it. Senator Kennedy was extremely tough in this, and Feinstein actually followed up on it. So I think that that must have been misreported, ma'am, because what I saw with Feinstein on both Roe v. Wade and the Concerned Alumni was very tough.
One of the things I am pleased to see that the coming out of the Alito discussion, or the Alito hearing, is while Roe v. Wade is important, it's not the only issue.
Oh, I really agree with you.
You know, and the fact that there were other, that if there are other issues out there that are being discussed and being used to characterize people's opposition to Alito is very important and very helpful.
I agree with that. And the thing is, a real discussion of civil liberties and the commitment of the nominee to that is critical for understanding where he or she is going to be on the bench
and
whether or not they're for the small person, not just big business. And I think Sam Alito's answers, when he recalled what he had done and thought, all pointed out to me in every case that he was for big business against our citizens and that he did not understand the struggle for civil liberties and civil rights in this country.
And he lied.
And he lied.
And he lied. We have to take another quick break. We'll be right back with Mary Beth Cahill. She's the former campaign director for John Kerry. She's joining us from Washington, D.C. I see you on the lines. We'll get to you. I'm Liz Brown. This is The Wake Up Call. Stay with us. We're going to let you hear a little Luther. Yeah.
Dance with him. I'd play a song that would never, ever end. How I'd love, love, love to dance with my father again.
This is your wake-up call global news update. Dateline Albuquerque. A New Mexico state senator has introduced a bill that would ban the popular sweetener aspartame. The substance is used in thousands of food products, but the bill defines it as a poison. The measure would not allow any food containing aspartame to be made, sold, or delivered in New Mexico beginning on the 1st of July. The state's Environmental Improvement Board was going to hold a hearing on aspartame in July, but has now postponed it until next January because it wants more legal opinions. It's not sure if it can affect a ban if one is passed by the legislature. An Italian study found that aspartame consumption contributed to the development of brain tumors and other health issues. Studies from at least 20 years ago came to the same conclusion. In 1994, the Department of Health and Human Services released a long list of adverse reactions the substance is linked to. Aspartame was allowed to be marketed almost 30 years ago, even though the FDA had doubts about it. The reason? Donald Rumsfeld, who at the time was head of the pharmaceutical company that developed aspartame, called in a number of favors to short-circuit the testing period of that product. This is your wake-up call global news update.
Talk radio that discusses what matters most to you. It's coming to AM 920, Monday, January 30th.
For the past several years, you've heard WGNU's community calendar of events going on in and around the area. Ever wonder where the information comes from? The majority of it comes from our listening audience. If your nonprofit organization would like help promoting its events and ongoing operations free of charge, send all necessary information to calendar@WGNU.net. Please send the correspondence 2 weeks prior to any events. WGNU reserves the right to edit or reject submissions for reasons of time and content.
I know the place to shop for all your appliance needs. Sears, 3425 Union, black owned and black operated, Jerome Williams. Sears carries the top six appliance brands, Kenmore, Whirlpool, Maytag, GE, Amana, and Frigidaire. Sears also has the latest in electronics, TVs, VCRs, camcorders, and DVD players. Now, if you find a lower price on an identical branded item with the same features currently available at another local retail store, Sears will match that price plus give you 10% off the difference. That's the Sears Price Match Plus policy. So, save yourself a trip. Stop at Sears first and get a low price promise plus a great selection for your home and garden needs. It's all at your local Sears store right there at 3425 Union, Jerome Williams, 389-9700.
Hi, this is Brett Rosen with Head Thumping Talk Radio on WGNU. Just letting you know that we are moving to a new time from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. every Thursday morning, dedicated to making you mad or making you think since 1999. Watching everything the engineer
would move. He's back.
By popular demand and because it's so right on time, we're putting President Bush back on the couch. Yes, Dr. Justin Frank returns to the next edition of Mondays at 9 for another analysis of the chief executive. Is the domestic spying issue indicative of a controlling personality? Does the president completely depend on Dick Cheney, or is he merely a puppet deciding who pulls the strings? So many more issues have cropped up that we decided another session was in order. Don't miss Dr. Justin Frank, author of Bush on the Couch, our special guest on the next edition of Mondays at 9. It's the information you need to know about but can't find anywhere else on the dial. The award-winning wake-up call with Liz Brown.
Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown. I'm talking to Mary Beth Cahill. She is the former campaign director for John Kerry. We're talking about ethics reform and the culture of corruption in Washington, D.C. with the Republican Party. Let me get to a couple of callers here. Ryan, do you have a question for Mary Beth Cahill?
Yes. Mrs. Cahill, my question is, I've been, upon doing some research on Hillary Rodham Clinton for a, is actually a report I was doing at a continuing education class, I ran across some information on the first ladies, and Laura Bush was involved in a car accident in 1963, and where she was where a classmate died, and she was in this particular reading was kind of, you know, hinted around to be the cause of it because she was speeding and so forth. Not that, you know, it was something that I didn't expect, is something I never heard of. And what my question is there any, because you're a woman, is there any suggestive reading on first ladies and things that about their lives that I might, you know, somebody might be interested in?
Actually, there are.
Thank you, Ryan.
I'm sorry?
I said thank you, Ryan. Go right ahead.
There are a bunch of scholars that specialize in the first ladies. One of them is Maureen Natoli, who is a professor in Boston, Massachusetts, who has written about the changing roles of first ladies through the government, through the time of our government. But, I mean, there's a lot written on this subject, and, you know, there have been some fascinating women who have lived in the White House.
Let me get to a car phone here. George, you have a question for Mary Beth Cahill.
Good morning.
Good morning.
You know, it's not just these Republican politicians. You got that whole Fox Network, you know, and the conservative show hosts.
Right.
That I think you guys really need to start taking care of, you know, expound some of their own hypocrisies.
Right. You know, there's always a real question about whether or not whether we should send guests onto those shows to, because they're so stacked, or whether or not you know, we should just let them talk to themselves. I personally don't think that we can let them talk to themselves, that we have to hold up our end. And some of the most the people who are the best at this for us in the course of the CARE campaign were Tad Devine, who worked for us, Dr. Susan Rice, who went on and explained foreign policy on any given day. And we spent a lot of time and attention on Fox because a lot of people watch it.
And let me get to one more caller here. Martha.
Good morning. Hello. You're talking to a Democrat here, an old Democrat.
Oh, I'm happy to talk to one.
How you doing?
Good,
you
and
you?
You
know what? Democrats are not fighting, not being aggressive enough. With all the things that are going on now, this is the time to jump on everything and see what time the Democrats, you know, we were for labor, education, and health, and very liberal. Democrats won't even use the word liberal anymore.
I know it.
You got to do something.
Yeah.
You have to fight.
You know, the thing is, I don't think the label liberal matters as much as I was saying previously in the hour of saying that we have a positive plan to help people on these things that really matter to them, like healthcare, education, and keeping our country safer. And I really hope and I believe that this election in 2006 is going to be fought hard on those subjects, which are of interest to all Americans.
And I guess that you get a lot. Do you get a lot of that? Do you get a lot of what the last caller said about fight? Why aren't you fighting?
No.
Why aren't you fighting?
You know, there's an awful lot of that, Liz. And, you know, occasionally I feel, you know, like people like Senator Feinstein mentioned before, or Senator Stabenow, or, you know, a bunch of other Harry Reid in particular, who fights every single day. And is out there trying to get attention, trying to introduce real lobbying reform, trying to make sure that we get the inside documents to know. The fact that the White House knew about Katrina on September 1st and decided not to do anything about it, they refused to release those documents, fighting for release of those documents. And I agree with what you said previously. There's a lot to be said for just fighting and going down fighting if you have to, because people want to know that someone's standing up for them.
Absolutely. And people want to know that in a pinch that they will fight for you, because I think that is one of the compelling features for the Republican Party. Even though they're dirty, even though they're lawless, even though they have a lust for money that I cannot even describe, people know that they will fight back.
Right.
And there is something compelling about, even if your friend is wrong, you know that he's going to be right there kicking somebody's behind on your behalf.
Right. You know, and I believe, Liz, that's what Harry Reid does every day. And
just like you had to pick the right people to speak on Fox Network and
right.
to get the message out. There's a certain type of personality that should be out front in aggressive ways, don't you think? And then not everybody is able to, while they may have the same philosophy, while they may even use the same words. It sounds one way coming out of my mouth than it does sounds coming out of another person's
right.
mouth.
No, I know that we have to have really partisan and strong spokespeople.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, those, and that's not just the people in office, Liz. It's, you know, the people who think of themselves as day-to-day Democrats, like, you know, like myself and a lot of other people in this country.
So who would you say is a really partisan spokesperson out there that does make the talk show circles?
You know, I think that Howard Dean actually has spent more time on this than anybody else has.
Okay.
And, you know, he is strongly partisan. He has a very strong idea of what we ought to do to both protect our troops and, you know, eventually have a plan to get out of Iraq. He knows that we need to provide health care that is reasonable and that people can depend on across this country, and that everyone needs the right and access to a very good education, things that the Republicans spend no time on. I think that Howard Dean is one of the strongest people on that front. I actually think Senator Chuck Schumer has done a very good job on this.
But he's pro-war.
Well,
but
there is that.
He's pro-war.
Well,
we're not all the same. I know we're not all the same, but come on, he's pro-war.
That's yeah, no, I find us.
You know, so,
yeah.
Okay, again, outside of the political circles, we've got Howard Dean, and we only have 2 minutes left. Tell me somebody else. Who else?
You know, one person who is actually very strong on this every day is James Carville, who is.
But did you see him? Mary Beth.
I did.
He's sitting there next to his wife, and he's not saying what needs to be said.
Well, you know, I think that over.
He also was pushing his. He's sitting next. He's doing a show with the host's son. What is he going to say that's going to be controversial?
Yeah. You know, I think that over the course of his career, he's been tough and stood up for Democrats.
We need some fresh faces, Mary Beth.
Well, we do.
We need some fresh faces out here.
Liz, go on TV. Go on TV.
Well. There's that. Mary Beth Cahill, thank you so much.
Thank you so much. I enjoyed it.
And it's a pleasure, and have a good day.
Thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Listen, folks, Liz Brown, Wake Up Call. Woo! That's it. James Carville. Oh, Lord. Lord. My name is Liz Brown. This is a Wake Up Call. I'll be back same time, same place tomorrow. Stay strong.
To use our power. Please do not ask for power. Nobody is going to give it to you. You were born with power.
Some very sad news for all of you. The people who love peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight. Remember? I will never say that progress is being made. If you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. You pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below me.
I think I'm hearing revolution.
WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis. 920 on your AM dial.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Daria Albinger. Washington to Hamas. You want to work with us? Then you work with us.
If your platform is the destruction of Israel, it means you're not a partner in peace. And we're interested in peace.
President Bush sent a surprise news conference this morning. He's not alone in his concern in what the militant group could do to overthrow Mideast peace further off balance. Hamas apparently won a majority of the seats in yesterday.